I think about five people phoned a friction, which venue it was, and I sent out four messages, so I hope everyone's here. Ask them just to stay here till 10 past 10, as it were, and then to take their leave. I see this was switched on. Okay. So let me start again then. Good morning. Welcome. My apologies for some of us being a little late, but we were completing a management committee meeting, which was very important. We do want to get through some of the key issues before 10 past 10, bearing in mind that some of you would have left by, you know, at that particular point. So particularly to members from the department who are here with us, when you see members leave, they're not going up to Table Mountain or to go and have a cup of coffee. They're actually doing other important work to which they are deployed and responsible for. So I hope that that is quite clear. Thanks to all those who are here, and I hope you treated your wives, your mothers, your girlfriends, your older daughters in a manner that befits the status of the mothers of the nation. And I'm sure they will reward you in whatever appropriate way of their status, whether it is a wife, a mother, a daughter. But I think South African men are some of the best men we have, having had a wonderful father, wonderful brothers, and, of course, a wonderful husband who put up with me for more than 50 years. So I think he's great. Right, over to committee matters. You've all got the agenda before you, and it's a very simple agenda here. And I do want to immediately just address things broadly. At this stage, I certainly hope everyone has had the draft strategic plan. If you don't, just raise your hand at this point. Everyone has had a planning framework. I don't know, I think it was called the committee program or something until the end of the year. Have you? Okay, you've all had this. Number one, you are in the process in this committee before 10 o'clock to receive this, which is the plan until the end of the year, which many of you asked for. Right, in fact, we all asked for it. And then we'll come on to the issue of the oversight of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry for the Fourth Parliament. And in many ways, that was part of our strategic planning. Not the strategic draft plan, but it came out of there. You will get that before 10 o'clock today. So make sure you have those and you study them in your respective political parties before Tuesday next week. The other issue is the regulations, which we're now going to be coming onto, and interactive gambling. Now, I want to address the committee as well as the department on this, perhaps the department in particular. The committee looked at this, as you are aware, a month ago, in fact 2 months ago, because we've had the break for constituency. And there was a position given to the department, a substantive position, which said, in simple terms, we are disturbed by some of the elements that have emerged from what could be described as the Principal Act, which finally now we begin to see in interactive gambling proposed legislation. And as the department pointed out to us, and quite validly, the Principal Act had been passed by this very Parliament. Quite right. But there is no doubt that the experience working with that Principal Act and the several amendments that have followed, it has become clear that many unintended consequences have emerged, and some of them more serious than others. So we reached a position then, as you know, in that last engagement where we said we need to review this. We need to seriously review this. And even in my speech as chairperson in the budget debate, I made it clear that one of the powers, constitutional powers of Parliament, is that legislation can be repealed and amended. I made that very clear. It does not mean it will be repealed or amended per se, but it means that those are our powers, which we will exercise actively should it be necessary. So we did call you back, having begun to look at it, and I would like other members of the committee, because we do have a quorum with us here, have our, we have seven members of our portfolio committee here. I would like to hear their comments before I give you the ruling and allow you to engage us on the matter. Yes, I now have to come back to people's surnames, which became so outdated.
Van der Vesthuizen.
Yes, Honourable Van der Vesthuizen.
Sorry, Chairperson. Can I just say, Mr. Kubus Marais contacted me while I was also on my way here. He drove in from Worcester this morning and was terribly stuck on the N1 this morning. He is on his way, he assured me, but unfortunately, due to the extreme traffic condition this morning, he would be a bit late. Sorry for that.
Thank you. But you also wanted to address us? No. Is there any member of the committee that wants to address this issue? Some of you were present, you know, at that long session. Some of you were not. But those who were present in particular may be able to add to that. Honourable Kalana.
Yeah. Jefferson. I understand that at this stage in time we are, you know, considering interactive gambling. And the unfortunate part is that there have been a couple of issues around interactive gambling which didn't emerge quite clearly at the primary legislation, at the time when we're processing the primary legislation. And the, in fact, let me say, issues like monitoring, you know, cell phone gambling, and ensuring that there is no underage abuse around the you know, cell phone gambling, for the lack of a better word. The other thing which, apologies if it's provided somewhere, is, you know, a convincing verification of the age threshold, you know, amongst a few things, you know, that come into mind. And obviously, from my side, it's on that basis that will be my first parting shot. You know, I'm still going to just run through this again and see if there's any other thing that reminds me in the documentation. Yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you, Honourable Njikalana. Honourable Van der Vesthuizen.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think perhaps if we could give these ladies the opportunity to do their presentation to us. I think the theme from this committee, if I can summarize it like that, is that we are very much aware of the damages, possible damages of interactive gambling. And when they consider the proposals, that they please deal with it in that light. For example, there was, if I remember correctly, last a request from them for us to consider where the daily allowance be upped from 20,000 rand per person to 50,000 rand per person. And I think, if I may dare to speak on behalf of the committee, that we would take the more conservative route in this way. But also then, although we understand that it's better to regulate these things and to bring it under the umbrella of legislation, etc., that we also believe that those people that are adversely affected, those people that become addicted to gambling and so on, that we will probably have to look at that side of the coin as well and see if we can't make that process, streamline that process, so that those people can be protected from the harmful effects of their actions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Van der Vestes, and Honourable Turok, followed by Honourable Mabaso.
Chair, sorry I was late. The traffic is hopeless. And I'm very pleased that the DDG is here. Because we're actually, and I've missed some of the discussion, forgive me if I repeat what other people have said. For me, the issue is quite simple. There was an article in the press the other day that somebody's son was left at home with a credit card. And this man went out and he said he left his credit card at home because he didn't want to be robbed. And so he left his credit card at home. So his son robbed him of 30,000 rand by gambling, you see, on the internet. We have, at previous hearings, said that this is an extension of the facilities of gambling, which we don't like anyway, but it's an extension. And before any extension is made, one really must look at the consequences and even the unintended consequences, like the case I quoted. And, Chair, I think that the department is putting perhaps... Sorry, I'm not here. Sorry, I was rushing to get here, so I haven't done all the necessary things. I think perhaps, without being unfair, that perhaps the department is putting undue pressure on us, not on a legal matter, but on a moral matter. And Parliament, above all, has a moral duty. So when a piece of legislation comes to us, we do have to pay attention to that area. I'm trying to switch this thing off, I'm sorry. So, Chair, I think that the department should really pay attention to the fact that we don't like this on moral grounds. And whatever adjustment is made, this is an extension of gambling which we don't like in principle, and it's a bad extension. And therefore, really, I feel that we should reject this thing. And I think I would ask the department to pay heed to the fact that we're taking a purely moral position. And it's not a technical matter of an adjustment to this bit and that bit. We just don't like this extension to what is already an unfortunate thing. And I think, therefore, I would really ask the department to say, well, you as MPs are the conscience of the country, and we as a department, we would like to adjust the thing to make it feasible, but if this is how Parliament feels on a moral issue, then the department must respect that, and I'd ask that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Turok. Honourable Mabaso.
Thanks, Colleague Chairperson. Following on the inputs that have already been made by my colleagues, I think what we will also want the department to illustrate to us are the benefits vis-a-vis the losses. You know, what do we as a nation? We are a developing country, South Africa, and we are a country where we are faced with the two worlds, if I can put it. And for people in the first world, gambling is simply an entertainment matter. But for people in the third world, gambling is a matter of it has all types of experiences. So that when they do make their input, they must illustrate what do we stand to benefit in a developmental area. And also to say, if they could also speak to comparatives between us and other African countries or developing countries, as well as the developed countries, the first world countries, if I could put it that way, on this matter. Thanks, Correction.
Right. I think that is other members who may not have spoken on the matter are members who were not in attendance, many of them, at the last, as you probably recognize yourself. But really, we would want to welcome Ms. Ntuli, the Deputy Director General of Consumer and Corporate Regulatory Division, Mr. Mosing, the Director. If you could just indicate yourself to members. You know, not everyone knows your face and name together. They may know the name and not the face. So the Director General, thank you. Mr. Mosing, Director, Regulated Industries. It's Ms. Yes. Mr. Marasha, Chief Operations Officer, National Gambling Board, and Ms. Malaki, Palaki, Secretary of the Board, the National Gambling Board. I think we certainly appreciate you bringing your team here with us. You've heard what members have had to say, and we'd like you to go ahead. As you make this presentation, I hope you will be able to modify it in such a manner that you address the issues that have been raised here. Because I see here something like 15 or 18 slides, am I correct? And I'm a great believer in nothing more than 10. But let's just go ahead on that basis. So it's over to you. You will be able, Ms. Ntuli, to direct your team accordingly. So if you want to stop and let someone take over, please do. But members, rather than have interruptions and dialogue, can you note your questions, please, and comment?
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to honourable members. And would like to thank you again for the opportunity to address this committee on these issues. Before we can go on to the presentation, I know that we've got a number of slides, but some of them are just frills. So we'll take out the frills and just, you know, focus on the things that I think the committee members would be interested in. But just before we do that, I just want to remind members where we come from with this legislation, so that the members would appreciate that as a department, as we come through to this committee and propose certain pieces of legislation for the committee, I think in our mind we know very well that it is the discretion of this particular committee to decide whether to accept or not accept the proposals. And as we do that, we also take into account the public comments, which often enrich our processes. Because you'll recall that sometimes when we start with a piece of proposal that we bring to this committee, and to the time when it gets finalized, you'll find that the public comments do enrich it such that, you know, it is a better product than what the proposals were. Because we always try to balance the interest of all the stakeholders involved. We try to look at the consequences. We try to also look at the unintended consequences. But also, we need to also recall that there are certain consequences that as much as we can try to preempt what the unintended consequences may be, there are some that we will not immediately see as the department. And also Parliament as a committee may not necessarily be in a position to see those. But as the legislation gets implemented, then we can see that there are some things that were never intended. And then we will always come back to this committee to say we think that this was not the intention. But also, it is the right and the power of this committee to call back on something if they think that is an unintended consequence that comes up, you know, while it's being implemented. So in 2003-2004, when the National Gambling Act was being piloted in Parliament, the aspect of interactive gambling, which related to gambling on the net, was then delayed by Parliament, particularly because Parliament wanted to assess the readiness of the country, the readiness of Parliament itself to actually legislate on this matter. And so I think as a department, it's proper and fair for me to express at this point that this department will be guided by the decision of this committee. And we are here because we also seek to be guided by yourself. We put the proposals on the table, and we really appreciate the guidance that we'll get from this committee. The issues that have been raised just initially by the members, we are seeking to address them exactly in the presentation. They may not be as elaborate as they are right now in the presentation, but we'll elaborate as we do the presentation. One of the issues that has been a concern, but is not only a concern for the for this committee, it's a concern for the country, it's a global concern, is the access of gambling to minors. I think when you're dealing with land-based entities like where you have casinos, yes, there may be minors that do get access, but at least the control around that seems to be very easy and possible if you apply the regulations properly. And we've seen that working with the land-based casinos and all of that. In relation to interactive gambling, as it is right now, what we find is that a lot of people are accessing it, and minors are playing, and often they are playing on operators that are not legal in South Africa, because interactive gambling is not legal in South Africa. So we are facing a situation where minors do have access to that as it is right now. But we are not saying that we are regulating because of that. But I think what is important for us to show to the committee is what is it that we are putting in these regulations to ensure that at least minors do not easily find access to interact on the net. And in doing that, what we try to do is to put some measures in the regulations to ensure that the registration process of people that will be playing with these operators that will be legal operators will then be required to have a specific process that needs to be verified, and that a bank account needs to be held, and a bank account would be held by an adult, which is a person that is over the age of 18, and without that, an operator is not allowed to register a person. So which means that if you've got legal operators that you are able to monitor on a regular basis, then you would be in a position to minimize the extent of access. So what we're saying is that the issue of access at the moment, yes, it is a concern, but we're saying that with the measures that we are putting in the regulations in terms of requiring the registration process to be more stringent, to put more of an obligation on the operators, and which will be part of their conditions when they're issued with the license, that if they do allow minors to play and gamble, then they would face the consequences of either their license being revoked or as well as facing criminal charges in terms of the legislation. But those are some of the things that we try to put in place. And you'll note that internationally, the concern has always been about that. But if you don't regulate it, the thing is that you then expose your market to illegal operators, and people will still access the operators that are illegal. Then you have no control over them. So what we say is that if we regulate that, the chances are we will minimize the prevalence of illegal operators, because there's an incentive to be legal, because then you will operate within a space that is legal. But we do not say that it will automatically lead to that. But we think that there's a high chance that it will actually increase the number of legal operations as opposed to people operating underground. And then we'll be able to limit the number of operators that can operate in a particular period of time. in relation to the issue that was raised, it was in relation to the 10 licenses, how they're going to be located. What we are saying here is that we're going to ensure through the regulations that the licensing process will ensure an equitable spread of this operators. And I think members should recall that internet-based activities do not necessarily rely on a physical location, necessarily. So in themselves, they don't necessarily account, for instance, for a large number of jobs, but they may actually account for a large number of revenue. So to the extent that provinces may benefit from this particular operation,
further away from the mic because it's a very sensitive mic. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. On that aspect, we basically saying that we will ensure through the licensing process that the spread of the operators is, you know, if approved by this committee, it will be done on an equitable basis, and that it cuts across all the provinces. So that I think the benefits that could accrue to it, which we'll try and demonstrate to the committee in a moment, that they can be beneficial to the country at large as opposed to just the individual provinces. So we'll do that through the licensing processes. And in relation to the proposal, or rather a concern that was raised in terms of extending the gambling to cell phones, we take note of the concern that has been raised. You know, the worry is that when you have gambling getting into people's houses where it's easier to do it, and you extend it to even other items, it is a concern. But here we're talking about interactive gambling, which by nature requires access to the internet. And access to the internet could be with anything. It could be with a laptop, it could be with a BlackBerry, it could be with a cell phone. So what we're saying is that even if we can try to limit the cell phone and exclude the cell phone from this particular, from the mode that can be utilized, even if we can try and do that, it will be an artificial exclusion, because it will not be possible, you know, immediately to determine, you know, what mode is used to access the internet. I think the issue is the internet, is access to the internet. As to what mode is being used to access the internet, it will not be easy from a regulatory perspective and monitoring perspective to pick that up. But what we seek to regulate is who actually gets on the internet and gamble. You know, is it people that should be able to gamble? Is it people? Is it minors? We need to be able to control that part. And in relation to how the legislation will ensure, or at least the legislation will act as a catalyst in, you know, for poor communities, again, I think we must emphasize again the reason we are regulating, or we are seeking to regulate this, is it's not driven by really the benefit that would accrue. It's more driven by the desire to limit the harm by regulating it. And in regulating it, then we then seek to see what benefits can then accrue. But the motivation is to protect the society, is to be in a position to ensure that those people that do find themselves, you know, in a position where they gamble on the internet, that they do it in a protected environment. And that also, as the government, we are able to control it and to ensure that people do not get overexposed, and that there would be programs that will deal with the people that are having problems with gambling and all of that. So it's really to put a framework that will try and facilitate that. But we're thinking that, anyway, through the licensing processes, you know, we will be in a position to, because we will ensure the spread, you know, of these operators, but also we're seeking to ensure that, because in the Act, it empowers the board to impose license conditions that will look at community development initiatives that will be determined by the percentage of the revenue that is generated by an operator, which should go to a particular developmental initiatives. Also, we also obliging the operators to contribute a certain percentage of their turnover as well to programs of responsible gambling. But then we need to say that, you know, I think with the concern that's been raised about gambling, I think we need to look at, you know, enhancing the effectiveness of these programs. It's good enough to say 1% of your turnover must go to this program, but if that program is not really reaching out to the people that are more vulnerable to this activity, then it's not doing a good job. So we need to ensure that we enhance that part so that it actually helps us. In relation to the question that was raised, and I think in this case, although the committee has raised a question as to what is it that we, you know, the NGB is doing at the moment, the National Gambling Board, what is it that it's doing now with the illegal operators? We're seeing advertising of interactive gambling, you know, on a daily basis. What is it that we are able to do right now? I think, yes, it's a question, but I think it even begs a much bigger question to say, if we regulate this, if we decide to regulate this, will we be in a position to monitor it effectively? You know, so we're saying that, yes, it is a difficult aspect to monitor, but that in considering the legislation and having it processed through Parliament, those are the considerations that we're given. And to say that if the legislation is passed and once the regulations become effective, we'll ensure that we give the sufficient capacity to be able to enforce it. And that includes enhancing the inspectorate function of the National Gambling Board. Currently, because the National Gambling Board monitors and enforces the legislation against land-based type activities, obviously would need to enhance their activities, I mean their capacity, to be able to be well-equipped to deal with the issues of interactive gambling. But currently, if I can share with the members, is that action has been taken against one of the interactive gambling operators, PixPix, with their advertising in South Africa, because they're advertising interactive gambling, which is illegal. And the court found in the favor of the gambling authorities in that case, but the matter is still on appeal. And the appeal is really based on technical issues, because what they're saying is that they're not in South Africa, they're based in Swaziland. Their server is in Swaziland. So when they are advertising here, they are not advertising that people must come and play. They're just saying how should people play if they do decide to play. So it's really technical issues that they are raising, and this is a matter that is subject to an appeal, so we still don't have a decision. But we are saying that the fact that this matter is still dragging in the court system does not mean that we should not take action when we find things like those. We still continue to take action, and as the NGB, and we ensure that we bring these matters to the fore. And very recently, we've also interacted with the Department of Communications to ensure that, because they are responsible for the advertising, for instance, SABC, you know, would fall under that. And most of the advertising would go through SABC as the big broadcaster in the country. So we are engaging them to say, this is an illegal activity in South Africa at the moment, and we will not be in a position to allow interactive gambling. So we continue to take action against that. I'm not going to touch on these things because, in fact, I think the issues that were raised by members touch on some of the issues that were raised by the public. So we just took an opportunity to include some of the concerns that were raised by the public during our consultation process, and we just included them for the members so that if the members feel that they would like to comment on those aspects, they can guide us if they want us to take them through. But we didn't think that we should take you through that, you know, unless you'd really like us to do that. But before we move away from this, I think it's proper for us to just address the questions of the members as they raise them, in case they have not all been addressed by our presentation. And in addressing these questions, Chair, through you, I would then, you know, ask my team to respond to some of the questions. So I'm going to take just a few of them, and then I'll delegate to the team. One of the questions that have been raised, obviously, by Honourable Member Ntsikelelane relates to the issue of monitoring, and this cannot be overemphasized. I think it's important that when we have legislation, we ensure that the legislation that is capable of being monitored is capable of being enforced. Because if we don't have that enforcement, if we don't have that monitoring, then we would not detect any non-compliance, we would not be able to take anybody for prosecution. So it is important that we beef up the capacity of monitoring. And we're saying, like I said, that we intend beefing up the capacity of the National Gambling Board to deal with these issues. But also, because electronic communication aspects are also regulated by the Department of Communication, we'll also look at government coordination in looking into how we can work together to try and achieve an enhanced monitoring capacity. Because in terms of the Electronic Communications Act, they also have cyber inspectors that could assist the inspectors in the National Gambling Board to actually have like raids and do inspections and all of that. But all of this would rely largely on what is it that in terms of capacity do we have to allocate to the National Gambling Board so that it can effectively carry out this function. And then in relation to underage gambling, I think we've addressed that aspect. But if members would still want to deal with that, we can give examples and share with members how other countries are looking into some of these issues. And the other area that came up, which we are seeking to address, which is in the comments here, is the issue regarding the limit of 20,000. There are a number of concerns, obviously, that were also raised by stakeholders, basically saying that if you put a limit on a player account of 20,000, what that means practically is that if a person is playing and the bank account is over by even 10 rand, that amount has to be transferred to their other account because it cannot be in that account because the limit is 20,000. So that may also increase the cost of just maintaining that account for the player. And we're not saying it's a good enough reason, but we're saying that if you look at it, if that limit is going to actually increase the cost on the side of the player, from our side, we're trying to protect the player. So we're thinking, let's look at it. Is it not worth our while to limit the loss? So you, in terms of limiting the amount within the account, then you limit the loss that if the player loses up to this much, then, they can't play any further. So that's what we are proposing to the committee to say, we have considered that. In fact, we don't think the 50,000 limit is still good enough anyway, because you're just increasing that. But the concern that we have is really about how much people can lose in this process and such that they get impoverished in the process. My colleagues would address some of those issues, and we note Professor Turok's comment relating to the moral issue regarding gambling. I think as a department, this is unfortunately we have to deal with the gambling, we deal with liquor, we deal with the lotteries. So I sit here often, and I know that it's not easy for us, to speak about these things without being emotional. Especially if you know somebody that is addicted. I have somebody that I know personally who is addicted. So it becomes easy for me sometimes to want to say, no, this thing must not be there. But what we're saying is that we're not looking just we're not ignoring that moral state, but we're saying that what will best serve the country? And if we come to this committee and we present to you that the reason we are seeking to regulate this is to balance this and that, and you see the point, and you agree with us, then that's good. But if the committee feels that, no, that's not good enough, again, we are at your mercy. We are at your guidance. We just await your guidance because this is your legislation. As it goes out there, it is your discretion as to how you're going to deal with it, because at the end of the day, it becomes Parliament legislation. So we really seek your guidance on that, but we are saying that we have considered these issues, and we are saying, as it is right now, Professor Strock was giving an example of a credit card that was used by a teenager. That is person, probably a person that is underage, and they used it on an internet player that is an illegal player. So those are the things that we're talking about. They now go and bet, and they play on that illegal operator. They may play even your 50,000 on your credit card, but because they are even minors, sometimes they would not even get the winnings because they would not have an account to put the money to. And what we find is that then there's a situation where people, when they win, because they cannot even get the winnings, then they start coming to the National Gambling Board. They say, I played and I won and I can't get the money. And then, you know, the third thing that we have to tell them is that this is illegal. What were you doing? You know, and we are saying, yes, we appreciate these things, but they're happening. Can we look at it from a perspective to say, is there a rationale to regulate it, or is there no rationale? Taking into account all the moral issues that go with it. I'm going to stop here, members, and allow my team to look at, especially the comparative study. I think Temba and Mpo, you can help us there, and on some of the aspects that have been raised by the members, if you feel that I've not touched on them. And I think particularly if we can also share with the members, because they've requested specifically some of our African counterparts in terms of how they're looking at these issues, and also looking at the developing countries, even not in South Africa, I mean in Africa, but also look at the developed world and see how they're actually dealing with this issue. Thank you, ma'am.
Before members of your team come in, we'd just like to, I know a couple of committee members have come in because we received their apologies. I believe there are all kinds of challenges on the road, and we understand that. And thank you for sending in a telephonic late apology. But with us as well, we have a close, if you like, sister committee, portfolio committee in Parliament, as you are aware of, DDG, and that is the Economic Development Portfolio Committee. And the chairperson of that committee, Honourable Coleman, is also with us here this morning. So, we appreciate and hope that you also will shed light or share your insights in this particular area as well, Chairperson. Thank you. But we hand over, as we said we would, back to the NGB and the department just to complete their presentation in the next, shall we say, 5-10 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm going to focus mainly on the benefits vis-à-vis the losses, with specific reference to countries in Africa and the developing countries throughout the world. Firstly, in Africa, one should note that there are two notions that African countries have taken on interactive gambling. Firstly, most of them have turned a blind eye and they have allowed it to happen while haven't proclaimed it either illegal or legal, which is a grey area. Secondly, we have seen our neighboring country like Swaziland, who have tried to regulate interactive gambling. And it's through that experience that we have seen that their regulatory regime that they have developed is far less below a standard of accountability, which is what we're trying to put forth here by ensuring that issues of gambling by minors, responsible gambling, you know, proper control and monitoring of the activity is being addressed properly. As we speak, they are regulating the internet gambling through a clause that was added in the license condition of PIC-6, which said that they would allow the interactive gambling while still using the 1965 legislation, which is some of the things which we have found to be improper. Hence, we are saying we're coming with this intense legislation to ensure that this regime becomes a reputable regime internationally. Coming to the issue of developed countries throughout the world, I think members should appreciate that the regulatory regime, when it's founded within the policy framework of that government, it focuses amongst two schools of thought. One is a self-regulated regime where the focus is mainly on revenue not really accountability as we are doing now. Then the other form of school of thought is where you've got a highly regulated regime. The focus is not on revenue, it's part of the benefits, but the focus is on responsible gambling and accountability by the regime to ensure that a proper and sound regulatory regime is put in place with regard to internet gambling. Let's look at the life of, for example, Alderney as a gambling jurisdiction. They fall within the first school of thought whereby they have a good regulatory regime, but not as extensive as the one we are putting before the committee, whereby they are not even limiting the number of operators that they want because of their focus on revenue. It's quite a small island. They want to raise as much revenue to overcome the shortfall within the services that they should provide to the country, therefore using gambling as a mode of ensuring that they can get more revenue on that. They are not saying to you, we will require you to do the following intensive things on registration. In actual fact, they say to you, once a player has been registered, you know, loosely as they put it, he can start to engage even if verification hasn't occurred. Even the likes of the United Kingdom, as a well-developed country, they're doing and taking the same notion, whereby people are running away from this well-regulated regime into their regime because of the lack of proper, you know, regime which ensures accountability and responsibility on that. They are saying some of the things are not within us. It's within the operator's imperative because it is that builds the reputation of the operator to ensure that it sustains its business. Therefore, we feel we should not regulate that, which in our own opinion, we are saying it shouldn't be like that. We are different, we are unique, we want to put a regime which is well-respected internationally. I mean, the crux of the regime that we have put, we have even received a call from the International Association of Gambling Regulators to come and make a presentation on that forum, that conference, to say why such a tight regime, because they see the negative consequences that are coming from this loose regime, the likes of the Market Gambling Commission, the UK, which is making them to go back to the drawing board to say somewhere we're doing something wrong, because the issue of accountability and responsibility. Disputes are there almost on a daily basis, and they are numerous in numbers. So those are some of the comparisons that one can do from the issue of responsibility, accountability within the interactive gambling regime. Coming to the benefits, I think there's quite extensive benefits from the interactive gambling that one is going to receive through the entire process, and one is going to try and unpack them in its entirety. Firstly is the tax itself, which is the revenue, right, as was proposed, the 6% through the money bill. This is also a veritable expense. It will bring revenue in the form of VAT, right? Thirdly, it will be a normal business like any other business. We should be subjected to company tax, the rates and taxes, you know, within whatever municipality or province where it will be located, which is, to us, is some other benefits. When it comes to the issue of employment, we have acknowledged that this is not an employment generation activity to an extent that it will produce mass employment. However, we have created substitutes where when we put the bid before them, they should, you know, put more on the side of the bid commitments to supplement what hasn't been put from the side of employment. So that is a notion that is going within the board to say this is what will be created. However, on average, for a big operator, you'll get something like 30 jobs per operator that you might see, to 40 jobs if it's a big operator. If it's a small operator, you can talk the likes of about 15 to 20 jobs. We acknowledge it's not massive, but again, it depends on the mutual cooperative agreements that we have with other jurisdictions to an extent that if it extends to borders within South Africa through the issue of whitelisting and being accepted to be good regimes within another, such that players from one jurisdiction and the other can play due to the issue that we value them as a well-regulated regime, therefore feel that our citizens are protected when they play, the issues of that like. So you can find the number expanding. Now, from the side of ECT, which is electronic communication transactions, there are a number of issues that come into play when you go into the issue of internet gambling. It will expose the country to a number of influx of internet accessibility. Therefore, the issue of a bandwidth is something that you'll see expanding, obviously, because you've got a number of people now who want to connect. There'll be pressure through these private entities which will be investing in the country in the form of being licenses to say, increase the bandwidth, and you'll find massive investments in terms of that. We've seen within the likes of the UK, after the inclusion of this way, the optical cables which were going through the Atlantic Oceans being expanded due to massive influx of the number of connectivity through this, because it's not only your players, even your own business operators would like to have internet access connectivity through certain services that they procure, be it in the form of software where it uses the bandwidth. So you get a lot of challenges from that. Therefore, when you come to the conferences of ECT, you find them playing a much bigger role to an extent that they make our ECT environment to be very, very world-class kind of environment that even from an ordinary point of view of business, you gain benefits through having a very good infrastructure in terms of ECT. Right, obviously, then the issues of investment by them into the ECT environment and generally into gambling environment. They are also going to contribute the 0.1% into National Responsible Gambling, which now, as we speak, from the statistics of the National Responsible Gambling, those that are not regulated within the country, the likes of your PIGSTIC and whoever, who are within mostly the southern region, you get these people calling into the National Responsible Gambling hotline saying, we've got problems. And you are saying, as responsible citizens, we're not turning them back, be it they're in the country or even a bit outside the SADC region. We give them, we do offer them that help through the online services, but it's help without a benefit. Once we license them, they will have to put a 0.1% of revenue into the National Responsible Gambling Program, which currently the likes of your casinos, limited payout machines, route operators, and bingo operators are putting into that. Hence, it's got a well-developed program today as we speak because it's funded by the operators. So it brings them into the mainstream, they are licensed, and forces them to contribute, which will expand the service that will provide them through the National Responsible Gambling. Now you come to the bid deliverables. Now, this is where the creativity of the board needs to be in terms of supplementing what hasn't been received from the forms of employment, where we are saying, in terms of infrastructure, what should these people put to the public of South Africa, to the citizens of South Africa, to say, this will be our infrastructure development, since we do not put much employment. I even mentioned in the past the likes of the convention centers, where some of the casinos have put it as infrastructure development to those areas where their casinos are located, to say, we'll put a convention center which will bring business and, you know, rippling effects through the economic activities that run around a conference center of a magnitude of a convention center. There might be a lot of things relating to sport and culture, where there is development in sport. We've seen the likes of, you know, other casinos putting sports venues where they always make sure that there's activities going on in the likes of sport, particularly boxing, to ensure that they foster the sport to elements which it cannot reach, particularly your rural areas. And there's development programs which we extensively monitor in terms of that. There are quite a number of issues. While in the past, when there used to be RP programs, they used to even develop to contribute to the development of those programs and the like, but all within the auspices and regulation by government as put in law, right? Now, there's a number of activities in the bid deliverables, because that is not a closed area, it's an open-ended area. Wherever National Gambling Board, in conjunction with government, feels there is a lack or need, it can be on the issue of, for argument's sake, verification agencies on BEE, because we want to foster BEE, we can guide them and say we want you to have development programs towards ensuring that the verification of BEE agencies occurs as and when it's wanted up to this level and so on. Right, and further to that, you'll get a number of things which relate to BEE, which is a core principle that we adhere to within the seven elements. And then obviously within the losses, or what we would call the unintended consequences, you will have, you know, the light of addiction, but it's a question of how do you manage it. You know, if you've got the management program, it's an issue of saying you will have it in place. You will have excessive losses, people gamble irresponsibly within the right. And I think one can wrap up in that fashion to say, these, in our opinion, are the benefits vis-a-vis the losses which one can foresee within the right. Thanks.
So I think we've covered the questions the questions that were raised by members and the comments that they made. But just to wrap up on our part now, I think it's important to keep the committee members abreast of what we also do as a department. So Remember that as part of the legislation in this morally not acceptable industries, gambling, liquor, lottery, we always try and do a review to see if there are any unintended consequences. And in response to the concerns raised by this parliament, the minister has commissioned a gambling review commission, which is going to look at the entire gambling industry. And the recommendations that are going to come out of there are going to assist this committee to make a position that is informed about where we come from as the country with this legislation on gambling, where we are now, what are the concerns, what needs to be done. And I think at that time, when this committee receives that report, because we'll bring it here as soon as it comes out, then this committee will be able to make an informed decision on how the industry looks like right now. Is it what we intended? If it is not what we intended, then this committee has got the right to say, you know, let's reverse the situation, you know, or let's manage it better, you know. But we're saying that the committee will have that opportunity, and we're not ignoring that because we know the nature of these industries and we need to monitor them on a regular basis. And that gambling review is taking place in this financial year, so the report should be coming to this committee as soon as it's finalized. And Chair, just to also apprise the members that with a technological advancement, you know, every day people now get to have access to the Internet. That also increases the chances of people being exposed to this type of gambling. So we are saying that let's look at it. If we're thinking that it may be dangerous in the long run because we'll have more people maybe gambling because now the increase to internet is now increasing, even people in the rural areas where you thought if they don't have a computer they can't play, but now they have a cell phone so they will access it. So it now increases the chances to access the internet. So how do we then manage it? How do we control it in the future? So this legislation is also premised on that as well. Thank you.
Right. Thank you to the National Gambling Board and the department. And it's over to ourselves, the committee. Now, what I would like, members, is we won't have any prefaces or preambles. If we could just get straight to our comment or question. And if there's a clarification, throw it in as well. So we're just starting on the right here. Honourable Turok there. Honourable Ntuli. Honourable Mabaso. Honourable van der Westhuizen.
Thank you. Chair, you know, during the last war, it was illegal to listen to certain radios. And although you couldn't stop it, but if somebody in the UK was caught listening to German radio, they went to prison for a long time and vice versa. So it seems to me that just because there's an international system which is illegal and which we don't like, and people are accessing that, we can still pass a law and say that anyone who engages or links up with an internationally illegal activity in this country, that this is an offence. We can do that. And I myself would prefer that we go that route than to say we are going to set up an alternative system which is going to attract people to our local gambling game rather than do the international thing. Chair, I think that we must say honestly that there's a difference of judgment between ourselves and the department on this issue. And it's a judgment based on partly on the facts you've presented to us, but mainly on the values. I would say that I could hear somebody coming from Las Vegas, coming to this committee and saying the sort of arguments that our friend there has made, this provides revenue, it provides jobs, and so on. And yet, overall, Las Vegas has an awful image internationally as a center of gambling, of prostitution, of the rest, you know. So, you know, the arguments about jobs and benefits. In fact, Chair, I would want to say, quite frankly, that if this regulation includes something about revenue, I would veto it myself. I will not support and vote for a regulation which says that South Africa government must benefit from activities of this kind. I think I would veto it. That's my gut feeling at this moment. So, you know, the fact that people are able to gamble internationally we can still put roadblocks in the way, and I've indicated one. So our approach should be, let's block what is an undesirable activity rather than promote an alternative system, which is what is being argued here. Rather than put an alternative system. You see, what we're saying is there's an international system which is undesirable. So what do we do? You know, let's regulate it and provide an alternative undesirable system. It makes no sense to me. I mean, you know, let's take a thing like tick. Cape Town is the home of tick and drugs. So are we going to say, let's provide legal access to tick because then people won't go illegally? You know, I'm sorry, the logic escapes me. So forgive me, but, you know, I don't like disagreeing with the Honourable and Thule because she's always so pleasant about it all. But, you know, I'm afraid we have a difference of judgment here. So can I just say two last things is, I don't think you regulate to protect society. If you regulate tick or various other illegal activities, I'm not sure that you protect, you actually legitimate. That's the problem. Then a question of enforcement. You know, I really can see children at school with the cell phones, you know, in the toilets or in the backyard, whose fathers have access and are registered. And there's a little child playing on the internet through the cell phone. So, you know, you are saying we're unable to control the cell phone because it's also on the internet and so on. But let's rather take the prohibitive stance and say, let's make it as difficult as possible when people gamble. Let's make it not as easy as possible. And if you say that a new facility like the cell phone can't be monitored or regulated and so on, then I say, let's make a law and say, anyone who uses a cell phone or allows their children to use the cell phone is committing an offense. You know, if my child drives a car under the age, it's an offense, and I've allowed it. I'm complicit. So let's make the law saying any adult who allows the child, who gives access to internet gambling, I think that finally I would say, let's wait for this review. That's my view. We don't need this thing at the moment.
Thank you, Honourable Turek. Honourable Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks, Jefferson. And I would like from the onset to say I agree with the limitation of the funds in the account available for gambling. I think I will go with that. You said you are going to enhance the distribution of funds to the needy entities. How are you going to do that? In fact, because I'm always worried about the distribution. You heard that the lotto is not giving so much millions to the needy people, and you don't find out who is supposed to monitor that lotto. What are the hiccups at the moment? Why are they not issuing this money? And if you answer that, who benefits from the interest which is gained when the money is not being distributed to the relevant people? Who benefits from that interest? That's my question. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Mabasa?
Thanks, Comrade Chair. My question is, when the department planned to come to the committee, was the department, assuming that you didn't need the yes from the committee, would you say that as you stand there, you feel comfortable to that, you know, this should be legalized, you know? So that's the one question. But the other question is, in other ways, I'm trying to test our gap. Is it possible that there's a gap between us and the department? Ideally, there shouldn't. But we also don't want to miss. We don't want to miss what you seek to communicate to us. Is it possible that we are not hearing, we are not understanding the department? You know, and to what degree do we have this interactive gambling going on in the country? The percentage, I know we are still waiting for the results of the review, but what are we discussing here? Is it possible that we are discussing something like prostitution, where we say, do we legalize prostitution or do we not legalize prostitution? If we don't legalize it, is it happening without control? You know, do are we looking at, is it more or less the same thing? And then you know the measures that we will put into the, or the loss, if we don't have it, assuming we ban it, what will be the losses to the country? What do we think we will have lost if we ban it?
Honourable members, thank you, Honourable Bob Mabasa. We then have Honourable Njikalana.
Chair, to me, I've listened with great attention to the input from the department. And so far, one is quite attracted by the fact that there'll be a review document submitted. That definitely would help us. You see, generally, my concern is that, you know, we are the people who make the laws. And this is my second term. And every time anything around gambling is brought here, we hit the roof. And the honorable officials across there, with a smile in their face, they just remind us that you're the ones who approved the initial legislation. And we are put right into a strong stop at that stage. Probably this situation is probably triggering that we need even a broader review of exactly, you know, what is our strategy purpose. What is our intention, you know, to have legislation on gambling? You know, is it about just conventional regulation of gambling? Is it about reduction of gambling to the minimum? Or is it the extreme of regulating gambling to extinction? Because there are countries who have gone to that extreme. There are countries who are at the other extreme. I'm looking at it, you know, the ease of gambling generally triggered by a specific area in the active gambling. Yeah, from that angle. Who knows that you know, once we do the review, you know, we may find that there may have been a strong need that even with the earlier legislation, we should have address the way we look at the morality, you know, aspect in terms of gambling. I know it's quite complex, but that's my little bit at this stage in time. A little bit of comment, but in brief, I really look forward to the review document and I trust and hope from our side as the committee, we'll also be doing our bit to prepare ourselves, you know, and look at, you know, historically how we have meandered and, you know, done whatever legislation up to now. Thank you.
I'll say that
Vice versa. But must be dyslexia. But I was just saying, I wasn't sure if it was a drink of water or it was the mic, but finally, after much persuasion, I realized it was my mic. Let me first take Honourable van der Westhuizen, and before I indicate what it was I was concerned of with in looking at the Constitution at that time.
Thank you, Chairperson. Until the majority party has discussed this legislation in one of their caucuses and have repealed the Act, I'm in very much the same situation as the officials, in the sense that we must now make the best of what we have. Now, until you take it to your caucus and you repeal the whole Act on gambling, I'm in the same situation as the officials, that we must run with the ball and make the best of a specific situation. And I'm trying my best to do that. So in that respect, I don't think it's on the agenda today here to address the main Act. We are now only concentrating on the interactive gambling regulations. And there I've got a few points to make. The first one is, I find a bit of an ambiguity when it comes to gambling. On the one hand, it's been presented to us as a fairly innocent form of entertainment. On the other hand, when it is advertised by the license holders, they try to create the image that gambling is a way of making money, which it isn't. And you know, when I go onto the internet, even on my fairly innocent MWeb website homepage, it says Mari from Sandton has just won 1 million rand, and you know, follow her example, there's a lot of money to be made through gambling. So what I would love to see in the regulations is, first, much stronger warnings when it comes to gambling. I would ask the officials to consider prohibiting advertising whereby people are encouraged to gamble because it's a way of making money, because it's a lie. And I think even under the you know, you can say one person has won money, but to create the image of that gambling is the way to get rich, I think we must make a prohibition, or put a prohibition on that. In the existing regulations, all it says is that we may not make use of well-known personalities to advertise, you know, that they've won money, or they want to encourage people to also win money and so on. I would like to take out the well-known personalities and just put a blanket prohibition on that. Secondly, when Mr. Fissmer addressed us in Pretoria, he said, no, but there are warnings in these, you know, sites and so on. Yes, the warnings say, addicted, get help, phone so-and-so. Or it would say, responsible people know when to stop. With all respect, for me, that is not sending the right message. The right message should be, the more you gamble, the more money you are going to lose. So only gamble for entertainment, not to win money. I really believe we should, because it's the truth. It's the truth. If I win 1 million rand today and I keep on gambling, one at a time I will be left with debt. There's no other, and that's the truth, and I don't think anybody can prohibit us from expecting the companies that do these things to convey the truth to their clients. Then also, I believe that, the website of these interactive gambling sites, I believe, must state under which country's laws it is regulated, so that when people then do go onto these sites, that they know whether it's a South African server that is driving this, so they know under which laws they are protected or not. Then fourthly, I believe there should be a much stronger duty, I don't think there's any duty at this point in time, on the license holders to try and identify or assist the responsible gambling initiative to identify addicted gamblers. I believe that, you know, just as you have certain patterns with people that are addicted to other substances, etc. If a person gets up at 3 o'clock at night, and gambles on a regular basis and so on, I think there must be certain patterns which identify addicted gamblers, and I believe there should be some other form of duty on the companies to say, listen, we don't know this person personally because we don't never see this person, but from the conduct of this person, we believe it's a case worth investigating or a person that might have a problem. Then also, it's a question that I want to ask. I would hate it to know that the person is getting social grants, like child grants, etc. And that person is using that money not to buy milk and bread and basic foodstuffs, but is using that to enrich the companies that have got gambling licenses. And I'm just inquiring whether this NSB 10 form, couldn't have a question on that as well. I know we may be treading on human rights, etc., but I would love us to explore that possibility as far as possible. And then lastly, I also would like to see that there must be in the regulations a much stronger emphasis on the maintaining of the confidentiality of passwords, that a password must be linked to the registered user, and also that the company undertakes not to obviously make that password available to any person. It's something that I believe should not only apply to gambling, and I know many people do that out of a self-regulatory sort of position because they know that they might weaken their position if they start leaking that. But we do know that many people, if you get one or two of my passwords, you can address my internet bank account. You can go on to, various of my other accounts and so on. And therefore, I believe that there should be a regulation as well to make it a contravention if anybody should, make that password, share that password with any other person. Thank you.
Honourable members, we allowed members to really ask several questions because this is a serious matter, and we said we would give you this time on the next occasion we engage with the NGB. if we can just speak to the DDG, is it just here for a moment? I have a few questions myself before I just give you some direction. The one issue which we did ask last time was the issue of a member of the NGB being included in the issuing of gambling licenses, whether or not they can take part or have an interest as an operator as well. In other words, someone on both sides. And secondly, how effective is the monitoring in this regard? Linked to that particular one, are members of the NGB allowed to be to take part as operators? Are they in fact allowed? If we can get that very clear. The other thing is, I think in some way you've already indicated you have experienced certain challenges in this concurrent jurisdiction. You have indicated that. But you haven't indicated as clearly, if so and with whom, and how this has affected the current legislation in place. And on the advertising, we have had the advertising referred to by several members here, but also you yourself have acknowledged the problems you've encountered with our own largest TV station, the SABC, and so on. And yet, although this is illegal and everyone knows it, you've had no success in getting SABC to refrain from accepting and entering into such advertising contracts. Although it is illegal, we find ourselves unable to prosecute it or take it further. If that is the matter right now, I mean, if something is illegal, what is it so difficult in enforcing it when it's so straightforward and both parties acknowledge that? What are the legal and technical loopholes in that particular regard. The other aspect there was, I was quite interested on the banking of winnings. You've made it clear yourself, and members have raised these questions, of the difficulty of monitoring and enforcement. You can't go into everyone's home and try and enforce it there and so on. And the variety of technical instruments that would effect such facilitation of interactive gambling in particular. So the question then becomes the winnings, the banking of winnings. Currently, as far as I'm aware, there's FICA regulation and Reserve Bank regulation requiring that any unusual pattern of funds coming in, funds going out, is reported, and you are actually asked. I think some of us as members of Parliament were even asked, where did this money come from when we got some kind of back pay that should have been paid out as part of our wages? And you have to say, well, it's my wages. No, no, no. Your wages are X. Can you just explain? You know, and that's just on a small issue there. So surely, if that power already exists, how is it that the NGB cannot also link into that process? And, you know, you've never referred to that, and to me that is a FICA link, if I'm not mistaken, and a Reserve Bank linkage. The other aspect of this is I still fail to understand this issue of 20,000 and 50,000. I think your proposed legislation and bill and regulation is to talk about 50,000, and the committee was suggesting a limit of 20,000. Is that correct? Now, and then you were making the point of it'll cost more if it's 20, you know, and I don't know. I actually got a bit confused then and wondered if it was very much like I can't switch the mic off and then I switch it on. You know, am I that confused now? I can't even work out what's going on from you. But there are these little machines, if that's correct. I'm not sure what you call them. I'm not a gambler myself as such. That you bang every 5 minutes and, I don't know, all kinds of things jump up and so on, and you put your, what is it, 5 rand, 20 rand, and 100, but you can't go and put 20,000 in, you know, in this kind of thing. So there's some kind of, I don't know what you call those machines that people bang around with. Yeah, well, those banging machines, okay. Now, what I want to know is if you can, you limit it there. You limit it there, am I right? Now, what I can't understand, and then, you know, why it's so difficult and you feel it's going to cost. Then you did raise one little point. Well, part of it is that it won't be competitive, then they'll run to the international things. So, you know, we've got to ensure that our interactive gambling can compete with Nuka Ladbrokes in London and so on. Now, I don't know what it is we're trying to do. Where do they sell the most heroin and all of this? Or should we try and compete on that scale? So what is it? What is this 20 and 50,000 issue? The final one there from my side is the, you see, you have to ask yourself, no, we're not a church. You're quite right. I think you were trying to move in the middle here. We're not a church. We're a government. And yes, there is the question, are we getting too involved with people's personal moral issues, or is this a broader ethical national issue and developing social cohesion, developing a culture in our country and so on? Is it that we're concerned with? Or are we now trying to run people's morals and we should all be in pulpits? What is the distinction we're trying to make here in that regard? The second thing is that repeatedly this issue, which has been raised by yourselves, may not personally by individuals here, but by the NGB, the department, the media, a number of role players, stop interacting, just pass the all these regulations, pass the amendments, you pass the original. So it seems once Parliament passes a principal act, members are trying to say, or stakeholders, You're not allowed to repeal that one because you're not allowed to correct your mistakes. You're not allowed to change it when you see unintended consequences. You're not allowed to. Well, that doesn't exist. It is in the Constitution that we can repeal our own legislation that we enacted. We can. So I don't think we must even raise that now as a challenge. We can. And we will, if necessary. We will, if necessary. So then, this is where we now begin to come to a ruling before you come in. We would like you to respond to the questions and the comments that have been raised. But we need to say that this portfolio committee in this fourth term of Parliament recognizes that there are many, many faults, loopholes, and unintended consequences that have occurred out of the original piece of legislation that Parliament enacted since 1994. But nevertheless, and notwithstanding that, we wish to know that we can continue, and we do know that, we wish to exercise our constitutional right that if necessary, we will ask for this to be repealed and replaced or drastically amended. And we are pursuing our own research in this regard. So at this particular stage, while we are asking you to respond to the questions and queries, there is no go-ahead from our side. We have been legally advised that, frankly, you don't need us to move ahead. Been advised in that regard. May I say, you do that with impunity. Mm-hmm. You do that with impunity. And I would really appeal to the NGB to take the deliberations of what has transpired here today and on the last meeting very seriously. No, we do not want to become another church. We are the government, we are Parliament, and we wish to recognize that in Parliament we have a Bill of Rights. Part of that Bill of Rights asks us to protect our people and to provide a safe and secure environment for them to exercise their full potential, their full potential. And we need to get a clearer understanding of how that can be achieved under the current gambling laws and regulations. And finally, I can't read this very well, but my committee secretary here, the committee secretary of the committee, says it's not covered as gambling here per se in the Constitution. It's covered as a concurrent, concurrent area, a functional concurrency as trade. And in many ways, that says it all, trade. Now, how are we, and probably that's why it's in trade and industry. So that is why we've got to take it very seriously. How does South Africa, in a new world order, want to conduct trade? Is the hallmark of its trade going to be gambling? Or what? Maybe it is. I'm not going to take that decision right now, neither is this committee. But we have to go back and we have to re-examine the foundation principles of this Constitution and how it directly relates to the mandate of this committee, and then how does it relate directly to our oversight and our exercise of that and the legislation that is a consequence of that, and that's how it relates to gambling. So for the benefit of us all, can you respond to that? And then we will communicate with you in writing as to how our own processes of reviewing the legislation are underway. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll ask the colleague to just deal with the issues briefly. on the aspects that have been raised by the members. I think, Mpho, we can start with you just to deal with the issue of advertising and maybe some of the issues that you think we may have to address.
Thank you, and morning, members. Okay, on the issue of advertising, during the deliberations on the Act last year, it came out really clear from the committee that we needed to go back and see if the provisions that are currently in the Act that allows advertising should still stand. And what we've done was to embark on a research process to see if indeed there is a correlation between problem gambling and advertising. And the study is now final, and what has come out of it is indeed there are a percentage of people or painters that are influenced by gambling. When you see an advertisement in the TV and you see a celebrity coming there advertising Gold Reef City and that they actually go to Gold Reef City and gamble. So when we review with the Gambling Review Commission, we're going to take that study, the findings of that study, for the commission so they can give us a policy position that on the advertising of gambling itself. But that doesn't necessarily mean that what the member is proposing with regards to putting stringent measures right now on the current regulations of interactive gambling, that we cannot do that. Yes, we can do that. And yes, we can restrict some of those issues. And what is currently in the regulation is that because that when you are an operator and you want to advertise, that your advertisement content must go through the NGP for approval prior to you broadcasting it. So that's one of the measures that we're putting in place to ensure that at least part of the advertising and misleading of advertising is taken care of. The issue of passwords, what the regulations are saying in the password is that a password should be a confidential, and even in the conditions, terms and conditions that will be placed in the website of an operator, that will come out really clear that that the password and your username should be confidential and should not be given, as with your banking, your internet banking password and username, that they should be kept confidential and should not be given to anyone. And you see, when on the monitoring aspect of it, when somebody comes in and says, but my password and username has been used by somebody else, obviously the NGP would have to investigate on that issue to see what really transpired on that. But the regulations are pretty clear at this point that passwords are confidential and should not be given to any third party for use. I'm trying to go through the questions. The issue of the 20,000 and the 50,000 share, is the 20,000 that was in the regulations was saying that in your player account, when you have money, the money that will be in your player account should be 20,000 only. And when we reviewed the comments and we said with stakeholders as well, we realized that it becomes an artificial clause, because at the end of the day, you will still be playing, and when, for instance, you've won 20,000 and 10 rands, if I can put it that way, it is required of the operator then that the 10 rand must be transferred to your nominated account, which then costs you, because then it's a transfer cost and so forth. And for that clause to be more meaningful, we're proposing that the clause be a limit. We put the limit, the loss limit, that if you lose, say, maybe 50,000 on transaction, then you are closed out of the system. You no longer transact anymore. Because then that one, it becomes more beneficial to the player, and it gives more protection to the play.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll address two or three of the questions that were raised by honourable members. There's an issue that was raised about board members taking part in licensed operated entities. Our principal legislation makes it very clear that board members are not allowed to have any direct or any indirect participation or financial interest in any of the licensee's operations. We have disqualification clauses in terms of our legislation that are very clear. There's also a conflict of interest provision in our legislation that addresses clearly that members cannot engage anyhow in activities that may undermine their integrity as board members. The disclosure is made on a continuous basis at each and every meeting. They have to ensure that they make such disclosures, and they cannot be allowed at any point in time to engage in licensees' businesses. There's also an issue that was raised about the success of getting the likes of SABC as a public entity in entering into contractual agreements with illegal operators that continuously advertise and facilitate these illegal activities. I think members are very much aware that in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Act, public entities have to ensure that they engage their other public entities to ensure that they have to exhaust all reasonable measures in place prior to pursuing any litigious matters. We have done that previously. We've engaged a number of public entities to make sure that they do not flight or promote such gambling activities on television or radios. I think it was stated at some point that some do agree to do that, but some have just paid lip service and have just ignored such requests, hence why processes are in place to ensure that other law enforcement agencies assist us in ensuring that we have successful prosecutions on them. Professor Shurak did raise an issue here about making it very clear in our legislations that, our systems, it be clear that, what sort of offenses we have in our legislation. I think in the South African context, we have always argued that anyone who offers bets or wages to South African citizens commits an offense, and that they should be found liable for the commission of an offense. In self-regulated regimes, you find that, as was indicated earlier on, the argument about where the server is based has now since moved to where the punter is actually based. And you find that some jurisdictions are trying to protect their own jurisdictions or their own people by saying that if you participate in our jurisdiction and offer bets to our people here, then the offense is committed in our jurisdiction, not elsewhere. It does not matter where the server is actually based. And it is true that we should have very succinct, clear provisions in our legislation that indicate that that is an offense, because otherwise there will always be that gray area that remains unclear as to where exactly it is committed, and we'll leave it to the courts to make that interpretation for us. Thank you.
I'm just going to ask the NGB to conclude in 3 minutes.
Okay, Chair, I'm just going to try to wrap up some of the issues that have been raised, not all of them, obviously. I think the first aspect, again, Chair, when I started my presentation, I indicated exactly that this department understands the mandate of this committee and understands our role here. And we are remaining to be guided by this committee. We will abide by any decision that this committee makes. And we've put all that we've got on the table, and we are willing to further engage the members if they are they would like us to do that. So we remain available. It is a concern that, you know, extension of further gambling activities in a country is not desirable. This is a concern that we all share and the department shares. But the department has been guided by the policy decisions that have been made, and these regulations flow from that. And the chairperson is correct to say that it is in the power of this parliament to even reverse its own decision, and we will respect that. So we just want that to be clear, that the department is coming here and will be guided by this committee. And then in relation to the issue around, you know, whether we are wanting to regulate this aspect because it's happening, I think we need to be clear about that. And I think the department, when we make proposals in our policy documents, we look at all the options. We look at whether we should leave it as it is, whether we should regulate it. And regulating it does not mean allowing it. It means you can decide by regulation to prohibit it. That's what it means. So when we say we're opting to regulate it, it is this parliament that needs to decide whether to regulate with prohibition or we regulate with allowing it with limitations. But we must always know what is the objective, and the objective should then, you know, guide the decision in terms of whether you're prohibiting or not. So in this case, what we're given is that the interactive gambling would be allowed, but with limitations, but the desire being that we need to control it such that we limit the overexposure, we disincentivize illegal operators. Because if you've got the situation where you control it legally, then you will minimize the chances of people operating illegally. But also, in the regulations, if you increase the cost of being found out operating illegally, then you need to ensure that there are teeth and you can do something about it so that it can serve as a deterrent again. So those are the kinds of issues that were in consideration during this process. And Chair, in relation to the question that has been asked by the member in relation to, I think it's Honourable Chirok Steele, in relation to the access of children to the internet, saying that we must be able to make it difficult. I think the member will note that in the regulations, that is exactly what we're trying to do, and also in the Act itself, because what we are linking the playing with is the account holding. You have to play with a specific account. So in that sense, that link and the obligation of the operator to ensure that they're playing with an adult who has an account that has been verified with a bank, that has got the stamp of the bank, and that is FICAD, then we'll be able to control that part. But then the responsibility is the burden is more on the operator to ensure that it's done, but then also on the monitoring side, because there's records that are the operators would be obliged to produce and submit to the NGB to also follow up and see if they're really doing that. And we're not saying that there are no things that will happen that will, you know, will fall through the cracks. It's the same thing as when you're regulating liquor. All you're trying to do is to limit the extent of consumption, the extent of abuse and all of that. But it doesn't mean that because people are drinking, therefore we should leave it. We're saying we must do something, limit the trading hours, doing all of these sorts of things. We're just saying, what can we do as a country to just ensure that we do that? And those are the balances that we try and weigh up to just come up with a proposal that will ultimately end here. And a question that was raised by a member in relation to the distribution of funds, I think it's Honorable Nduli. I think that question relates more to the national lotteries because it's got a fund that is supposed to be distributed for good cause projects. And I would say that, yes, it has not been effective, and we said that as a department. And we are taking control over that to ensure that it's going to be fine. It's going to be corrected. There are inefficiencies that are taking place. We need to ensure that it's done properly. But in relation to this gambling industry, again, how is the responsible gambling program measured? How do we know it's effective? You know, that's why I said we need to enhance that. So we're going to look at how we're going to enhance that, how it should be made effective, because the money would be there because the contribution would be automatic from the operators. But as to whether it actually serves the purpose, that's another question. So we need to enhance that. So we're not going to be able to give you all the details, but those are the things that as a department we're looking very closely into. And in the other issues that were raised, I think Honourable Member Mabaso raised an issue regarding to what degree do we have this interactive gambling happening in the country. I think, Temba, you'll give us the sense there of what the extent is. It may be increasing, but again, we don't want to regulate just for the sake of it. I think there must be a basis for it. And Chair, you raised a question regarding. Now, before I get to your question, Chair, I think Honourable Member for Nevis Station raised an issue regarding ensuring that people do not use the money, such as the grant money, for that. I think that is really something of concern, and we will try to put measures in the regulations. If we go ahead with them, we'll put a measure to ensure that that is restricted. But I just want to draw attention to also the clause in the National Gambling Act, the Principal Act, that actually says that it is prohibited for even a credit provider to provide a person credit to go and gamble. You know, it's unfortunate that obviously it's something that you are not able to determine, because people come and ask for a loan, but you don't know what they're going to be doing with it. But I think the principle is that we should not allow it, and where we can regulate it, we should be able to regulate it. So I think that also raises an issue about, you know, the extent to which we should allow the player account to be the credit cards, because that's credit. Are we allowing people to play on credit? You know, so those are some of the issues that we're going to really make sure that in the regulations they are addressed and they are properly at least streamlined to ensure that we achieve the purpose. Chair, I just want lastly to address your concern. I think we failed to respond to it, and I think it also tried to draw us back to the legislation to say it prohibits members from having interest in operators and all of that. But as this issue is coming up for the second time, we are concerned, and would appreciate, you know, if the chair would, you know, in a way, be able to communicate to us if there's anything that we are not aware of, because members are required to declare the interest, because they are not supposed to have it for them to be part of the board. So we need to be, we are very concerned, we will take that seriously, and we'll follow up with yourself just to ensure that we address the issue with you. And the last part, I think, on your part was the issue around the winnings, yes. The legislation, you'll see that the interactive gambling legislation is linked particularly with the FICA, and FICA regulations are part of the condition of the license, because this legislation relies also largely on that, because there's also an element of ensuring that the money laundering issues are taken care of, and so it incorporates that exactly. So it does address those issues. So I think I'll just give Temba the last part to deal with, and then I think we would have addressed most of your concerns. But again, we thank you and remain at your guidance. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Without waste of time, let me embark on two quick questions which haven't been answered. The first one is the percentage of IG gambling in the country. It's a very difficult one for us to conduct research and come with a figure. It's merely estimate through getting it undercover, because the people are not coming forward to us since they are illegal operators, because they don't know what our intent is. But we've got a sense that about 9% of the population is involved in illegal interactive gambling as we speak at the moment. The second 9%. Yes. Right. The other question links particularly to the winnings and FICA and the issue of reserve banks. I should put it clear on record that I think it's regulation F2.1.7 of the foreign exchange regulations explicitly states that the forms of winning that you get in the internet gambling environment from foreign jurisdictions should be cleared with the foreign exchange to an extent that they are paid into the different accounts. As I speak, I've got several cases with the Standard Bank where there are a number of people through monitoring processes that we have and certain undercover people who help us where they have paid some amount of money from these illegal gambling operators. It's so unfortunate on them because what happened is those people even came back to us that were not fully paid as per the winning price, where you see them illegally saying, I want the 9 million, or they say to you, we give you the 1 million, you'll get the other one in trenches and so on. We've engaged with both the FIC in terms of that act of wrongdoing. That kind of an activity, and we have taken the matter even with the banking association. It's a matter that is continuing in our agenda to ensure that once we've concluded the matter, the necessary people who have done the wrong, which is particularly the banks that have released that money, they should be charged accordingly in terms of the FIC Act. Now, this thing doesn't only go as far as the FIC Act is concerned. It goes further to even the operators, because some of these entities, through the investigation that we have done, and we've put it to SAPS and the FIC, whom unfortunately, from the side of law enforcement, which is outside our territory, they haven't done anything. Well, we've put it clear to them, in terms of our investigation, who are owning these entities, some of them are South African companies, and what should be done, and, you know, the prosecution that should carry on from this. So it's a case now that is with the law enforcement agencies, which is continuing. As we speak, we are, with the organized crime, filing papers in terms of the illegal advertising as it is occurring, whereby it's a bit of a technical with the founding affidavits for us to be able to prosecute with it. But we are going through that hurdle, and once we finalize it, we will leave over to the law enforcement agencies. Unfortunately, from our side, what we get as a deterrent from these people, sorry, as a problem from these people, is that they do not view gambling acts of wrongdoing as priority in their own, you know, list of issues that they should deal with. You know, it's until you remind them time and again that I've got this issue with you, and they'll tell you about the present priorities and so on and so on. I think it's that unfortunate situation that we fall in when it relates to acts of wrongdoing within the gambling fraternity, which are taken to the law enforcement agencies. Thank you.
We're hoping that we've addressed all the questions, and we'd like to really bow out but thank the committee for their indulgence as always, and we look forward also, you know, to this committee in enriching our proposals, and that's why we're here. And Chair, we will not go against your feeling, even if we are not legally bound as a department to really stick to this process, because the legislation is already in place. But that's not the attitude. That's not the approach that we've taken with Parliament in as the department. But Chair, I just want to thank you, and I just want to say again that this legislation, the interactive gambling legislation, is not the most attractive in the world. We are nowhere close to where the ones that have legalized it are, and we are saying that we don't want to look like them because they are revenue driven. For us, it's not about the revenue. So we have put so many restrictions that when we're doing the public comments, most of the people were saying, but this is going to discourage the people from playing, so how are we expecting us to make money? And we say, if it leads to that, the less we have of operators, the less we have of players, the better, you know. So for us, the motivation is not to get this thing and encourage operators because it's a form of investment. No, we've got other ways. We've got a lot of money in the lotteries. in that account to, that we can develop, we can spread that money. So it, that's not the motivation for us. So I just want the committee to look at it and appreciate it from that perspective, and that the department has also weighed up some options. And we're saying what we always bring here is what we think reasonably is what is required, but we always remain to be guided by yourself. And thank you very much, committee.
I really must say, Ms. N. Tooley, that we are very fortunate that you are the heading up this particular division as Deputy Director of General Consumer and Corporate Regulatory Division. We are very fortunate. And I say this because we do realize that you are here dealing with, in some instances, issues that are highly challenging to the ethos, if you like, of the people's democracy, as it were. We realize that. But we also appreciate your openness of engagement. We do. We also welcome the suggestion you've made of if some of us do have information that may indicate that there could be members of the NGB involved in areas where they shouldn't be, we need to bring these forward to you to look at and so on. So we certainly appreciate that openness. But as I say, it's perhaps certain members of the committee have been here before and are aware as to where this has taken us. The Principal Act, and that certainly it does require review, and we ourselves can't say at this stage where that review will lead. We would preempt a proper research into the matter. So as we get to particular points, we will make you aware of the status of that research and that position. So it's not a question of keeping you in the dark. We want it to be very clear. The purpose of the review is so that we have a clear understanding that we are not deviating from perhaps the original intentions that Parliament had. So I'm glad you understand our position, and certainly we do understand your team's position that you are leading so effectively. And I think that some member of the committee did indicate it really is very healthy when we have someone who's not, positioning themselves up for a boxing match, but rather engaging us effectively and constructively in a manner that will take the country forward. Because I think that's where we do have the same goal. I really want to thank you for you and your team and ask you to avail yourself of the tea we have, limited due to budget constraints, I'm sure, but certainly it is liquid, and probably tea and coffee. I know that there is a point someone wishes to make, but I didn't recognize you, Advocate Bedger. I don't know if it's your hairstyle, wondered if you were... why, the committee secretary was engaging what could be a new committee member so earnestly. But it is, of course, the advocate who provides our legal advice. Thank you. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Just a final comment before tea.
If I could just get an indication of the way forward. Thank you.
I wanted to say, so that we formalise the way forward, and it may be that even you need to be present just for that, Ms. Ntuli, we will develop a proper position of the committee, which has been worked out by our advocate who's taken our intentions on board, plus ourselves, and put it into a proper, proposal. But I think the committee secretary just wants to fine-tune it with myself now, have a look at it, before we present it to the committee after tea. So, because we have to formalize this. It's not simply the chair makes a comment and so on. So I would appreciate it if you just stayed on until that decision is taken or position. Members, it's 11:20, And while our intention is to finish at 12:30, certainly we've always said we will finish no later than 1. So please be back at 11:30 if you can, so we can continue. It's now 11:20 on my watch. Thank you. Professional. we'll move on. Members, thank you very much for being on time and so on. As I said before we broke for tea, I wanted to read a proposal to you of what we have interpreted as the committee's position, and then can we have a proposer and a seconder? And obviously, if there are any objections, please raise them. So I will read this slowly. People will have it in their pigeonholes tomorrow as well. Obviously, the department may also wish to listen to it, and we'll make sure you get a copy before you leave. The committee recognizes that in terms of the National Gambling Act 2008, the minister is empowered to table regulations in Parliament before publication in the Government Gazette. The committee also wishes to confirm that the minister has duly tabled the said regulations in Parliament and further brought it before the committee for consideration. The committee also recognized that there is currently a lack of clear procedure in the rules of Parliament and the principal act on the manner of approving such regulations. The committee, however, is advised that procedurally international practice dictates that unless there is a specific provision in the principal act, it is normally accepted that Parliament has approved the said regulation. In spite of the above, the committee wishes to confirm that in the light of recent unintended developments, it has taken a position to review the National Gambling Regulation, that is the principal act, in its entirety. And during the process, would interact with DTI in this regard. The committee would also like to convey to Ms. Ntuli and her team from the Consumer Corporate and Regulatory Division its appreciation for the open manner in which it has engaged with the committee on the matter of interactive gambling regulations. That is the proposal of, concerning the committee's position. Please, can we have somebody to be a formal proposer of it and someone to second it? Certainly.
Can I just ask the word entirety? I would be happy with something less strong than that. So I don't know, the other committee members must please say whether they also believe that it should be, you know, reviewed in its entirety, or whether we just have that on certain points it should be seriously reviewed.
Put it slightly just to indicate that one other way of dealing with that is we refer to the principal act at the beginning and we give the year. At this paragraph, we could say to review the national gambling principal legislation, review the national gambling principal legislation 2008. I'm just also looking legislation, and leave out entirety per se, and during the process. So let me read the whole sentence. In spite of X, Y, Z, I mean, we agree with that point, the committee has taken a position to review the national gambling, is it just legislation, and during the process will interact with DTI in this regard. That's the sentence now. Right. Well, I think Mr. Honourable Van der Westhuizen was saying he would move if that was clarified. Now, are you still going to move?
Chair, I don't want to delay this, but again, I think we are on two topics here. The one is the issue of the principal legislation or just the gambling legislation. The other one is the one on the regulations. My impression is that I came here today to cast a vote on the regulations, and I think the focus has shifted now. What I was saying is if the proposal was that we would refer the regulations back for further review, then I would move on that. My intention was never to today vote on the Gambling Act, because quite honestly, I haven't studied that.
We appreciate your input. I'm just going to allow the advocate, Bridget, to come in at this point, and then we will come back to the committee. Is that all right? I'm just looking at a few hands. And so that she can comment on all of it. That will be fine then, yes.
My understanding is that as you were reading there, it's very clear that if something is not sorted out in the Principal Act, there's very little perhaps that you can do in regulations. Hence, perhaps we have to deal with the Principal Act. I thought that was the case, that perhaps that is why we have now gone back to the Principal Act. I will wait for the advocates.
Thank you. Let's get the points from the committee, and then there'll be an overall comment from yourself, advocate. Yes.
Alternatively, Chair, we could split and be quite clear that our initial focus would be on the regulations. However, we'll also look into the Principal Act as well.
We've had two points being put forward. We've had one of the issues raised by the Honourable Van der Westhuizen. We've heard that. It's a valid point that he's put on the table here. So let's just get a clarification. Do you want to talk as well, Honourable Ntuli?
Thank you, Chair. I was saying that we do support the combination of the two ideas.
Advocate Beja?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to clarify, that's why we have this, in what you just read, it's like a preamble, because I had to put it up front that we recognize that there's very little that the committee can do if the Principal Act is silent, because I have been advised by the procedural advisors that due to a lack of a clear procedure in the rules on the matter of approving the regulations and the Principal Act being silent, just saying that they must table, and then it ends there, and then it has, of course, been referred to a committee. Then our internal processes, which are the rules, they are silent on how we move forward. They lack a very crucial aspect, which, when we deal with international agreements, which I'm dealing with, it specifically mentions that when we deal with the rules on international agreements, it specifically mentions that there's a provision there in the rules that say that the committee must inquire into the subject matter of the agreement with a view to recommending or approving or rejecting. And that is lacking as far as delegated legislation is concerned. So the international practice is that in the absence of that provision in our rules, and due to the fact that the Principal Act is signed, it just merely talks of tabling. The international accepted practice is that Parliament has approved the regulations. It's a ceremonial matter. It just, it, it, taken that Parliament has approved the regulation. So unless the department is willing to indulge us and fall back on the implementation of the regulations, then we can follow up Honourable Jikelana's suggestion and Honourable Kosi's suggestion that we split, we look at the regulations as well as the Principal Act. And I'm hoping with what Osis Zodo said before she concluded the presentation, that as a department they would be willing to consider the guidelines of the committee, then we would be able to split the regulations and the Principal Act. But we're in a kind of a we're kind of in the director's hands as far as the regulations are concerned. But I'm sure they also understand the position that is taken by the committee, that it is the committee is in this predicament because the Principal Act is silent on the manner of approving, as required by Section 101 of the Constitution. And our rules, the rules of Parliament, also do not provide for a clear procedure of approving or rejecting the regulations.
Honourable Moret.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, this will imply, if I'm correct, that we will look at the regulations now. In other words, you know, regulate what is going on now, look at the Principal Act, and then we might come back again and change the regulations again, depending on what happens in the Principal Act.
I think the problem we're faced with is more challenging. Before us, we don't have the legal authority, as it were, to stop the process of the rules going forward. The department, merely out of the kindness of its heart, has chosen to bring it here. You see, we placed ourselves at the mercy of the department, in inverted commas, because Parliament has no rules in this regard. It's what we were identifying in the strategic planning. There are a number of loopholes in our rules. Now, we can't fix up everything overnight. We can't do that. However, we're faced with something on the table. Now, certainly it is my practice always to try and get as much input as possible before, you know, charting a way forward, as it were. Yes, you had a point to make, Honourable Turok.
Chair, I have the impression that the overwhelming view of the committee was that we should ask the department to wait until the review happens. So there was no outright rejection totally. And so I would say, since the department has clearly indicated they would go along with this approach, you know, we're not discussing legal provision and rules at the moment. We're discussing procedure. And it seems to me that what is a reasonable way forward is to say the committee has asked the department to delay these regulations until there is a full review of the whole gambling exercise, at which point we will re-examine the issue. That, I would suggest, is the way, and I'm sure that the department will agree with that. They've indicated that. Secondly, there is no reason for us not to re-examine the Principal Act. And when we do that, I think that's subject to the decision of the committee, because clearly, in my view, and I was here, I'm probably the only one, maybe Comrade Jikelana was here, but I remember very clearly, when the Principal Act was passed, the committee was unhappy about this clause anyway. But we more or less agreed with the department to let it go through. We now see that maybe we made a mistake at that time, we went too far, and so at our pleasure, as a committee, in consultation with the department, we will have another look at that particular clause, and when we're ready, there is no need to rush the whole thing. So I formally move that the committee takes a decision that we delay these regulations pending the review, on the understanding that the department is willing to go along with that, no matter what the rules of Parliament say. This is an agreement between us right here. And that at a later stage we could review the Principal Act at our pleasure. And I don't think anybody's going to really argue with that sort of.
Yes, it's just, I know Honourable Mabasa had his hand up, but I do think we've concluded or reached a position on this matter. There are two different points of view in the committee on this particular matter, although the goal is identical, you know, as I see it. Now, if we really listened, and perhaps that's really a bit arrogant, if we could just appreciate the point made in this last paragraph, that what we're talking about is to review the National Gambling Regulation. The reason for the review is currently, if the department at this point, I know they won't, but I'm saying if it wanted to, it could choose right now to say, well, thank you for the deliberations on the matter. These will be published and put into effect next week. They're legally entitled to do that. You see, due to our own... No, I'm just saying, due to the problem... No, you know, our legislation and our regulation, and I think we should realize this, can never be individualized for a particular group of people or individuals. It must stand up robustly. And this is what is not happening as we sit here. I don't think anyone can sit here and tell me this was a robust piece of legislation that can weather these particular issues. And so we're here to do this knowing that we have a number of procedural difficulties. To move beyond this point into active gambling, we're unable to effectively do that. We're unable to, because effectively a number of the issues raised here today have allowed it under the national, under the current existing principal act. It's allowed. All we're doing here is identifying those loopholes that were created and weaknesses and vulnerabilities and tinkering with it, but it's still there to haunt us. So I know some members have called for the separation. I think that it's important to link why you have a problem in moving on interactive gambling. Why? Why is there a problem? The problem is that in the Principal Act, it did not specify this. That is the issue. If we, in the Principal Act, as does occur in some legislation, and we do know that, it said the regulations must be referred to the committee for approval or whatever, whatever. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist there. So here we are at the pleasure of the department. They can move off. Fortunately, we know that there are individuals that desire to engage with us constructively. And that's all we have. We have that desire on the table. And unfortunately, we should not make legislation based on an individual's desire. That is not what should inform our legislation. So I'm going to read the last paragraph for the last time, and if there is an objection, I want a proposal to be articulated. Okay? I hope I'm making myself clear. I think there was no problem with 1, 2, 3, and 4. Am I right? I just want to make, you know, the first paragraph stated a position that exists. The second paragraph said, also confirmed the fact that the regulations were here. They're here. The third paragraph is the one that makes our problem clear. It says, the committee also recognizes that there is currently a lack of clear procedure in the rules of Parliament. And the Principal Act on the manner, and in the Principal Act, on the manner of approving such regulations. Those are all facts. So we're all clear. We now come to differences of opinion, perhaps. The committee, however, is advised by the Advocate Bedger, is advised that procedurally, international practice dictates that unless there is a specific provision in the Principal Act, it is normally accepted that Parliament has approved the said regulation. That is the advice of the advocate and the information of the advocate. Okay, do we have a problem with that? No. We then move to the nitty-gritty paragraph, the one where we have differences. In spite of the above, the committee wishes to confirm that it has taken a position, and this is where, listen carefully, the real conundrum arises, to review national gambling regulation, and during this process would interact with DTI in this regard. Now, in that paragraph, there is no reference to interactive gambling, you know, in that critical paragraph. I'm just pointing that out. In spite of the above, all these problems we've got, the committee wishes to confirm that it has taken a position. Why do we want to review this? Why? Why is it necessary to review that? If we came to this, we probably wouldn't have noticed it, except we're dealing with interactive gambling. So that is the problem paragraph on the table. So I'd like whoever wants to object to give us an alternative. Secondly, because we've got to take a position on this now. Second, we'd like to have another form of proposal put forward. The first three paragraphs have simply given us the facts. The third one is again the advocate's background on what is happening everywhere else. So all I want now is that, and I want a clear, I don't need any preambles, histories, nothing. I want a statement.
Correct, Chairperson. I want to second the articulation that you are expressing, because I think it covers both areas, and it also opens a way of engaging on the matter in the future.
Madam Chair, maybe just in terms of what I've heard, that last paragraph you've mentioned, a review of regulations, but I think what about then the review of legislation? Because I think that was also the intention.
Right, it is the review of legislation and not regulation, but it's just the opposite way round. But I said the only thing that the committee members may wish to note is that in that paragraph, it doesn't refer again to interactive gambling. A regulation. That's all I was saying. It does say review the legislation, but it doesn't make a reference to what triggered it. Yes. So we'll have Advocate Berger.
I don't have a chair because I wanted to bring in what Ms. Murray had originally suggested, because legislation it encompasses the regulations as well, because they do not use it. Yes, yes. So whatever we might do in the principal act might affect what is in the regulation. So it would help to be, like Prof. Turek said, an all-encompassing process.
The advocate is just making it clear that regulation is, after all, subordinate legislation. You know, some of the things we were told at the Strat Plan. I'm not sure, Honourable Van der Westhuizen, if you wanted to come in just before Honourable Turok came in. Yeah.
Chair, my question is whether we should add another paragraph saying the DTI is requested to delay the publishing of the regulations and in the meantime to take into account the comments or the inputs of the committee. Can we add a paragraph to that effect?
In fact, I think that is the strong feeling that was expressed here in points, and it doesn't change our sentiment that we are deeply concerned at suddenly where this has taken us. But I want to make one thing clear. Now, this is not in here, and I'm just waiting for the committee secretary to write that in writing I can read. And that is, it doesn't in any way imply that the legislation will be repealed. We simply state what our constitutional rights are. What it does imply, and in fact state clearly, is that we need to find out how did we get into this? You know, what is there in the Principal Act that was weaker than it should have been, not as tough as it should have been? Words to that end. And it may only require one clause amendment, for all I know. But it doesn't tell you that we're going to change everything. We are going to review it, and we're going to use a lot of research and keep everyone involved. But what have we got here now, just articulating the point that has been made? Can you please repeat yourself, Honourable Van der Veste?
I hope I can do that. The DTI is requested to, in the meantime, requested to delay the publication of the proposed regulations, and to, in the meantime, on interactive gambling, and in the meantime, to consider the inputs, take into account the inputs of the portfolio committee.
The implementation as opposed to publication, because they've already been published.
The implementation is.
It's the implementation.
Yeah, we'll put it.
You see our difficult we put, we found ourselves in a very difficult position. It's already there.
Sorry, Chair, wasn't it public, publicized for comment and inputs?
Yes.
Okay. And we're part of that process.
Yeah.
So the final draft has not yet been publicized. So in that respect, I think it's only once the final product is publicized that it can be implemented. And it's that final publication that we want to delay or hold back.
I think we still have two points there. The one, of course, is that once they've heard from us, they have the full authority to go ahead and implement. You know, they don't have to come back. I'm saying if we leave it. I'm saying there is that. You could do that. Not that you're going to, but you could if you wish to.
Yes.
No, but I'm saying, I'm just making it clear that we need both points. We need not only the publication, we need the implementation part. So we're going to keep that. The DTI has been requested to delay the publication and implementation of the final publication and implementation of the regulations on interactive gambling to take into account views expressed by the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry. Now that we have that paragraph added, can we have this proposed, please?
Honourable
Van der Vesthuizen is proposing that this is the position of the committee. It's seconded. You said, yes, I'll take the whip here, the Honourable Chris M. Tooley. Is that clear then? And we'd like to thank the DTI, the division in this area, for your patience and also your accommodation and understanding. Thank you, Advocate Bedger, as well. Thank you. You are released at this point. Thank you.
Thank you,
dear.
Yeah.
Right. Members, I think that was quite a difficult one, but it also is one of our first exercises successfully completed in different points of view, reaching a consensus, which bodes well for the future operations of the committee. So let's go forward then to consideration of the draft strategic plan. As members are aware, we worked together on this for 2.5 days or so. I understand that you all received this yesterday in pigeonholes or whatever, and that it was an email to everyone. I'm saying this hesitantly. I received mine by email. But all it has done is to order our discussions, our deliberations, and our positions in a proper manner, as it were. So what I'd like to do is, I'm looking at the time we have left as well. We could go on for 45 minutes.
and that would assist us or assist the Secretariat in completing a final position for you to place. It doesn't mean it's adopted. You can still take it to your respective political parties, but we're talking about the actual final draft for adoption. So can on that basis, I'll take inputs from different members. Honourable Tup.
Chair, I think it's a very neat document and very comprehensive, perhaps more comprehensive than what we had. What I'm missing a bit is something about the objectives of the whole exercise of oversight. You know, it is very important that the objectives of our work are set out. Now, I don't have time now, no, I couldn't do it. But certainly we should start off by saying that the objectives of the oversight is to encourage or ensure that the department pursues the following goals. So what's missing here is the goals. For instance, we cannot have a document coming from this committee which doesn't refer to job creation, to value-added, downstream, etc., that kind of stuff. So I think it's a very good document, done very professionally, but I wish we could have had, and I don't know how you do it, something at the beginning to say the objectives of the oversight of this committee are in pursuance of the following goals, and then we go on to the activities. So I don't know if somebody can draft that sometime. I don't think you should do it now.
We have the time to develop. I would rather we use this at least 40 minutes, you know, just to finalize that kind of thing. Not, you know, blow by blow, but if we look at the objectives, we've got strategic objectives here. But what has been referred to is an overall goal, set of goals. We have the vision. Some people sometimes call it a mission. You know, you'll often see different entities calling it a mission. But what I am asking for is, where is this oversight document? Is it distributed? Is it distributed? I'm just looking around. Yes, okay. Yes. There is something, you weren't here at the beginning, and when I was saying this is the one we're going to be looking at. Okay. Yeah. Now, somewhere in here, we have a vision, we've got the mission, as it were, somewhere down here, which talks about perhaps some of the issues that you've just raised, Honourable Turok, but which we need to develop further, I don't know. The other thing as well, when I went throughout this, it was on four that we came to the issue of oversight. If we looked at the vision right here, and I asked myself, when I looked at that in particular, what is one of the main things that Parliament, through its engine, the committees, in this case trade and industry, is required to do by the Constitution? And what differentiates it from the executive, if you like? We're both members of Parliament. We have a particular role to play. They have another role to play. And together we do something. Now, one of the things which I believe is a differentiation is oversight. You can't have, what do they call this thing in a soccer game, player and referee or something, yeah. You know, so the executive is the player, I suppose, and we are the referees. Now, surely that's one of the distinguishing features of a portfolio committee, you know, which says we're not the executive, you know, we're the portfolio committee. And
I don't know if someone wants to correct me, but I didn't immediately see that in the vision. You know, oversight. But I'm saying now I want to be corrected, because I think that's the input I wish to make, certainly. The other thing which needed to come up very clearly, which members of this committee said on that workshop, you know, Chair, we know you want to plan for 5 years, but, you know, we are facing a crisis right now. Surely, you know, we should we want the 5 years, but can we begin to just focus on now and the next year? Do you remember some of you saying that and all, yes, yes, and pulling me back a bit there? Now, when I look at that, the overriding thing today, overriding, which our committee deals with, is economic development and employment. Right now, and the fact that the industrialization or whatever is collapsing. It's falling around. It's collapsing around our knees. Did that come through clearly enough? And the third question I want to put to you. If you look at who we are now, all of us have come back into a fourth term. It's a new term of parliament. Some of us may be the same people, but our respective parties have taken slightly different positions, can I put it that way? They've revised them in the light of the current socio-economic and political terrain that is upon us. We've all taken, and the government, or the party that is now the ruling party in government, also took a position. Is any of that quite clear? So it's those three positions. What makes this fourth term for trade and industry different to last term? You know, so when you respond to that, you may say to me, Chair, it's covered, but can we get looking at just the vision, the mission, and the objectives, without going into the detail now, can you please make your comments? So we're not talking about a blow-by-blow account. So it's over to you. Let's see your hands.
Following on your comments, Comrade Chair, because in reading quickly one might have missed this, I didn't see the broad-based black economic empowerment, because while we seek to redistribute and normalize the equalities, but we still seek to pursue this objective. It's just that in a different way. Thanks.
That's what I want, just your own gut feeling on this. You haven't studied the document, yes. So we had Honourable Van der Westhuizen, followed by Honourable Njikalana, followed by Honourable Ntuli, followed by Honourable Marais.
Chairperson, in short, on reading again what we've done last week, or what's been summarised as what we've done last week, I want to agree with the previous member that said it's a very professionally drawn up document, and I haven't had any change of heart. I still believe what we did last week was good work, and it still reflects our sentiments. I just think that the question that's been asked is whether the two documents, let's call it the oversight plan or strategic plan, and the broader vision mission document, whether those two shouldn't be merged into one piece of work. And there I would want to ask the committee secretary, Mr. Hermans, whether they've had any guidance, because I also do know that sometimes, you know, a big organization, they've got how many portfolio committees, and they may want to try and get a similar style, a house style, for all the committees' work, you know, all the committees that met last week. Do you want these oversight plans? Is the form or the template for this a bit prescribed? If so, then I would understand why we jump straight into the oversight plan. If they say no, we've got the freedom to, you know, design our own document, then I would suggest that we perhaps merge the different documents or the work that we've done last week. So if you could just give us some guidance, unless there's a template, let's merge, please.
There's another proposal, broadly speaking, and I wonder if we couldn't just hear what everyone has to say first before you come in, Andre.
Chair, thank you very much. If I look at the vision and the mission, obviously, in my opinion, the vision is not something where you put in the detail. So that's your broad vision, your broad objectives for you, where you're going to. Now, in terms of what Honourable Turok has also said on the vision and job creation, the only probable addition that I will make to that vision that was handed out is in that paragraph where it says, thereby enhancing the consolidation of a non-racial. There I will probably, or my suggestion, I will probably say thereby enhancing job creation, economic development, and the consolidation of a non-racial, non-sexist, prosperous, and democratic. Just to touch on the emphasis of job creation and economic development. And obviously economic development will implicate that when you go into your detailed plans, that is where your BEE will come in, where your community economic employment will come in, and that is where your detail will sit, not in your vision statement.
Let we all know who's next then.
Yes, Chair, thanks. Also, I must join those who are commending the document. Being in the second term, it's actually, you know, quite inspiring that we are beginning to have a tool that will guide us throughout the 5 years, as well as on an annual basis, quarterly basis, up to a weekly basis. One can at least visualize that to quite an extent. Just a few things, Chair. One, in terms of programs, my understanding is that when you talk of a program, we'll then look at an annual program, a quarterly program, and down to a weekly program. The second area I just got attracted into and just played around ideas from my side is that in terms of the process, what would be, you know, included in it. Well, the first thing is to provoke thinking around as to what we mean by processes. My understanding is that it's the means for implementing, or articulating the means for implementing the program. And, it would be helpful to me to be clear on that as to how would we do the annual planning, the budgeting process, annual assessments, you know, processing reports, and even things like end-of-term assessment. There could be other things, of course. I take the point that it's still an open-ended area. I think beyond that, depending on the deadline, well, I started last night. I've been just making a few inputs here and there on the document and comparing to my notes. But it's, as it is structured to me, it's fine. That's another thing. I assume that something like budget plan would fall under processes as well. But I don't believe it could stand off this on its own, because then my understanding is you don't start with the budget plan. You start with the annual plan. Then the budget is the financial implication, you know, arising out of the budget plan. If it were to stand on its own, ultimately. But understanding that this is a strategic plan, to me it would rather fall under process. Then out of this document, we then would be able to confidently develop and design annual plans down the line. Thanks.
Sorry, Chair.
One other thing we need to look into is down the line, when we do our programming, not much the strategic objectives, I think programming is to see how we balance our investments. Because what I sense is that there's an expectation that in this term, emphasis should be much on oversight work. I speak with a little bit of confidence on that, just talking to people around. So if you could make sure that we package our programs, that they outrightly get biased on oversight work, you know, a little bit more than 50% on it. Thanks.
Honorable MT.
Thanks, Chairperson. Although I'm not sure how to put it, but I was saying there is a lack of emphasis on oversight and monitoring. I think what we have said, that we are not the executive. I think somewhere it has to be emphasized that our core business is doing oversight and monitoring. Somehow it has to be emphasized, or it has to be clear on our mission and vision to for everybody to say the core business of this committee is oversight and monitoring. Somehow it has to be clarified and it has to be tangible. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable members, quite a few of the points made are to do with really how we ensure that the documents we have in front of us, will they achieve the purpose for which they were intended? You know, the points made about should we perhaps consider amalgamating both, if you like, the oversight activity type plan with the strat plan was one such suggestion. Others are to do with processing. Others are to do with, I think, most of these, what do you call them, facilitators and so on who are doing this, who enable companies to develop strategic planning and that kind of thing, come up with and say, what is your core business? What is the core business of this organization? What is it? Two, now that you know what it is, what is your vision in that respect, and so on and so forth. And I think that these are some of the gaps, and as everyone has indicated here, there's Ms. Herling and Mr. Hermans have put together a very sound professional document from which we can work. And really, you've heard the committee's appreciation in this regard. So the changes we are now making, it's because your document has enabled us to move forward. I think I must say that at the outset. But I just want to hear what Mr. Hermans says in response to, were they given any guidelines of a technical nature that may take us forward, before I come in again, Mr. Hermans?
With regard to the question raised, Mr. van der Westhuizen, is that we did not receive any clear guideline for how to develop a strategic plan for committee. So there's currently not a standardized document or standardized process for us to develop such a document. So one can say that if this is approved by the committee, probably most people will probably look at it and probably use it as a form of a document. But we didn't receive any instructions that X, Y, and Z must be in. This should be the format, and this should be how it should be done. Now, the other reason why the oversight plan was separate was that because when we discussed the whole process, we thought this is all the detail is in the oversight plan, and maybe not want to put the detail in the strategic document, which we can. There's no rule that says we can't put it in the document. But the intention, I think, Parliament also has the oversight mechanism document model out. And if I'm correct, and I'll double-check, the intention is of that document, if I'm correct, I speak under correction, is that each year a committee must table an oversight plan to the House. This is what they intend to do for this particular year in terms of oversight. And the House would adopt it and hold the committee accountable in terms of what it intended to do. So this could be a separate document that could also be incorporated. But the intention would be of the model would be to table such an oversight plan in the beginning of each year. This is what we intend to do as a committee in terms of oversight, and Parliament can then hold the committee accountable, the House, to do your job. But we can merge it as one document and just extract and table it as a separate document if the requirements do arise. But we didn't receive any template or anything. It's just what we thought we should be in the committee.
Just carrying on, yes, Honourable Mbasa, just on this point.
I think this must be seen as a positive, as a positive for us. You know, the fact that we are not restricted. But having said that, then I'm then going into a little bit of what might be seen as detail, but which I want to argue that I want to see it more as a principal part. You know, because the vision is not constant from period to period. It's also informed by the previous experiences of the previous. And noting that, I know it will not be easy, but I will still argue that equity, you know, where we seek, because we must also say, what are you looking for as you do oversight? As you do oversight, what are you looking for? And we are looking to see if the department perpetuates the way it has done things previously, where we had the unintended consequences of empowering a few people at the expense of many. You know, I'm speaking at length. So it means we must look for that, so that there must be a difference between this document and that document that gave us those unintended consequences. And hence, that's where I say equity and triple BED must not escape us. But that triple BEE must be qualified all the time.
So just on that, and I'm just waiting for Margot just to finish that one. If you come back to the vision, as I understand you, and I want to just understand you clearly, are you suggesting then, putting forward the idea that it's job creation, economic development, equity, and? Is that what you are suggesting, the equity there? You know, when I look up always to see, is there an objection? You know, there's obviously, we're not passing it at this particular point. I must make that clear. This will come back to us because you need to take it to your respective caucuses. So on. Okay, and so we've left it there. Yes, Honourable Van der Vest, with your stuff, Tura. Well, won't you let Honourable Van der Vesthuizen speak and then you come in, Honourable Tura.
Sorry, Chairperson, my input isn't on the detail of this document. I made my inputs last week. What I want to say is, you know, we may come under scrutiny for the fact that we have been away last week, that we've had this strategic workshop, that we have incurred some costs in that regard. So I was just wondering whether we shouldn't, perhaps just as a footer or something like that, said this document was developed during a workshop by the Portfolio Committee on these dates, and that we then put together, I almost want to say, all the outputs from that workshop, and when we extract something from that, like, for example, the oversight plan or something like that, that we say that this is an extraction or taken from the outputs of this workshop.
and we can perhaps say outputs from the workshop or whatever, approved by the committee either today, next week, or whenever we come back to this document.
Actually, I think that's a very good idea. We don't have minutes of a workshop, obviously, and so it may be useful to get a report, a one-pager, simply indicating these were the expected outputs, etc. This was achieved, listing what it was, and the cost. In other words, we are accountable for the costs incurred, and whether that was justified or not, whoever is reading that can then decide for themselves. So you're looking at really a one-pager, at the very most a two-pager, and in future we should establish that as a regular situation. So if there are no minutes of something, there would have to be a report of one kind or another. Thank you very much. Honourable Turok?
Yeah, a few very quick points. I think Chris's point about monitoring could be accommodated by having exercises, monitoring and oversight, although oversight includes monitoring. But you could easily say exercises, monitoring and oversight. Then the question of equity is very well dealt with in the Mission 2. It's there. The question of the point you raised about oversight is very well captured in B, capital B, strategic objectives. And nobody could doubt, you know, that this is a priority. B. Can you go to B? Yeah. Improve its oversight. You know, it's at length. So anybody reading this document will know the committee understands that it's a very thing. Finally, I think what we should do is to, taking account of what Andre says, we could easily slot in the oversight before the programs as part of the main document. And then if Parliament wants something from us, we just extract it and stick it in there. But it does fit into the document and makes it more comprehensive. And I think I would say, really, I don't think we need to go very much further with this document. Honestly, we've done a good job, and let's for once give ourselves some applause. For
I like that one. I certainly agree with you that it's captured oversight under B. The point I was making and has been now included by someone is that we need to ensure it's there in the vision right at the beginning. Which someone has done, one of our members has added something there, and to that monitoring was done effectively. Okay. So I think let's just see if there's no one. Honourable Njikalana, I want to close off at this point, so I'll take yourself and I'll take Honourable Maria. Honourable Kotze, you did say one or two things. Are you covered so far?
No,
right.
Chair, I would rather we regard the oversight plan as an oversight strategy, because the plan demands a lot of detail. It is good as is. But my only other input on it is that under trade agreements and negotiations, it would be helpful to actually include as a distinct sector intra-African trade, because our policy on international relations and cooperation is that it's Africa first, and obviously trade activities flow from that context and framework. And also under South-South partnership, there could be one other area that could be added is Mercosur, because there's obviously a growing activity interacting with Mercosur. To which I still see, if I can motivate, that if you say this is an offside strategy, that when you take each and every section, we then would develop a plan out of it.
An activity.
Yeah. So, yeah, then this document is just a strategy, good as it is.
Well, I think the point has been made that if anything was missing, and you're still coming in, Honourable Marie, is we've got this here, but where is the detailed activity plan to do with each one? Notwithstanding, we do have a program for the next few months. Honourable Marie?
Thank you, Chair. Just on that mission, if we could just go back to that mission. Just that two, where it's now been broad-based black is now being brought in there. I think the original one where we said ensure equity through economic empowerment and transformation, I think, you know, being to bring in broad-based black is, it's an overemphasizing of what you intend to do. And I think last week we also talked about the principle of a community empowerment and how one can, you know, that implication of broad-basing that. I would just say that, you know, in a mission you must, you know, also, you know, prevent from repetitive and saying the same thing over and over. So because that is where your actual plans come in your strategies, which is further in the document in terms of broad-based black economic empowerment and the legislation and our concerns in that regard. So that has actually been captured in that document, in my opinion.
I just want to raise a couple of points there. There was a very good book written some time ago by a socialist who had done, not simply a socialist, but a sociologist who'd done a research in Africa, in South America. When I say some time ago, I mean about 20 years ago and so on, 30 years ago, and the book was written up and updated. And one of the criticisms she had and shortfalls was that in Africa itself, part of the problem is that economic elites, because now all broad black-based, you know what I mean, and so on, but that multinationals, together with what she called economic elites, were now achieving what the colonialists had tried to achieve and never quite. In the sense that the broad grouping, the majority of the population, remained impoverished in certain countries in Africa because economic elites were getting it all. In so many ways, the reason why we want to say and why we are saying broad-based economic empowerment is because we identified a similar tendency beginning to emerge in our own country, can we put it that way? Now, the word equity captures all of that, hence it's used in the Constitution. But somewhere, and I take the point that has been made by Honourable Mabaso, it's not possible then, we have an oversight plan here. If we look at triple B, is it triple B, triple E, and so on and so forth, it's had so many additions to the B's and the E's, I'm never sure which one we're at now. That's an overall thing. It's almost like saying, gender must be taken to account, woman. It applies to every single program here, every single one that is here. You don't want to... Now, is there some way within this, this one called the oversight plan, we can specifically pull out that issue and put it in and note what it is that we are dealing with here? Because we actually said this is a priority. You know, when we were there at the strategic workshop. And you're now telling me it's somewhere here, is it?
That's right, Chair. On that page 2 of the oversight plan, it's broader economic participation, where it deals with cooperatives and then broad-based black economic empowerment, incentive schemes, etc., vulnerable groups, etc. So it deals quite...
I'm just coming to. Unfortunately, it's not my page 2 because mine is 14 points. It's my page 3. But you've got it there, very clear, that this is prioritized right there. And where does it come from? It comes from the equity issue. Now, I'm posing that
to Honourable Mabaso to take into account. We are not adopting this document here today. I want to make that clear. We are trying to make some constructive inputs where we've slipped up over what we have already agreed on and where we believe we overlooked and can improve. And we've done that so far. I think the strong point that's come out is we need a more detailed activity plan in some areas. I think that's one of the points made. But I can assure you already, and I would think that Honourable Njikalana would agree, that when I look at this and I looked at some of the activity plans arising, it's one of the first times I've seen a committee beginning to identify such a process in such a systematic manner. So it's really beginning to assist us in this regard. But what at this point, what I would like to say, please forward to the committee secretary any additions. See, it'll come out the way it's just come out. How will it come out? It'll come out in what is it, red or italic or I don't know quite. You know, there'll be a, we'll know what's added. It's not just going to change this document without anyone's agreement. And you can also email me so I know what is beginning to develop in that. So feel free to do that in the next. If today is Wednesday and Thursday, so that on Friday he can certainly, you know, complete this process and beginning to bring out, email everyone that particular document. So at this point, what we want to say is we've contributed in some way to these two documents, which we've just received. We're going to study them in our caucuses and individually. And we're going to put it aside for the moment. And this will then be adopted. When is the plan? Looking at our, we haven't got the August, although I did ask for the August to be redistributed. Has it been redistributed, the plan? Because some folks may not have brought it. So if you look at the plan here, the draft program for the second quarter, you can see we've got Wednesday, that's today, next week Tuesday is quite a full one, and then we have a possibility, and I always say this, there's Friday there, a possibility. And the reason we always say a possibility is we made a commitment we wouldn't really use Fridays unless it was absolutely necessary. Do you remember that? So I want to put it to you. Are you agreed with me that the sooner we adopt this, the better? Certainly we've got to do this by the 25th, from what I understand. So, Honourable Turok, can you read my mind as to where I'm going?
I want to make a comment about the whole thing. The whole program, you know, I have a feeling that we're overdoing it. You see, taking account of what Caesar said earlier, oversight must be 50% of our work. Policy work should also be a major part, and sitting in committees is often very counterproductive to that. And going from experience, you know, I think what you'll find is certainly my experience, is that you start off with an enormous crescendo of meetings. As the year gets on, people get tired, other interests come in, constituency work, you know, this, that, and the other. And I wonder whether you haven't been a bit too ambitious in this programming. And I would urge that we slow it down a little. I can't give you individual bits. And in particular Friday, I would say only in an emergency have Friday. Otherwise, you know, if you overload us with meetings, certainly speaking for myself, my feeling is that if I go to too many meetings, I do nothing else. You've got to read the papers in advance. You've got to prepare. You don't want to just come and sit here like a donkey. And it's work. And I think that slow down on the committee work. Let us concentrate on many of the other things. For instance, the oversight issue, my last sentence. We really must travel. You know, for years I've been saying to this committee, let's go to the Transkei and say, where is the DTI in the Transkei? You know, all this talk, about rural development, whatnot and whatnot. I say, there's no DTI in the Transkei. Why? You know, and you can only find that out by going to Mkanduli, to places like that, and looking around and say, is there any real DTI activity, small enterprise, and Sika, Kula, all those people, are they there? You know, or no, many of the reasons. That's the point. So let's slow down a little on the programming of committee meetings. I know it's very tempting, but...
as I said, certainly you will see from what you've been handed that Friday was not identified except twice. And for the very reasons, if we go further afield to the end of the year, you'll see the first Friday, I think there was one in September, although we took it out, and it's October. The first one is October, the first Friday. And the next Friday is the 23rd again, but that's to accommodate. We've got a couple in October. We then have two or three, but then we don't have Wednesdays, if you see that. So in other words, Fridays have been kept to an absolute minimum. They don't even figure before the 9th of October. Yes, Honourable Mabaso.
I second the spirit of the message of Comrade Turok. It's good that we ourselves acknowledge that we are doing quality work here with the secretarial that's also efficiently assisting us to do that efficient work now. But we must say we are doing this work to carry us to the future. So that we must see ourselves more in the regions, in the provinces, where this poverty is. That's how we will be measured. We are not going to be measured, yes, for ourselves. These documents are a tool. But a tool is as good as nothing if judged by the recipient of services, if that recipient is not receiving the services.
That point is made, although if you look at your oversight again and strategic plan, you will see that even Parliament itself is insisted, which we've implemented, at least two external committee meetings. Not here. Not here. In other words, go to Lusiki Siki and have a committee meeting there. And in having that committee meeting, which you may have in the morning, say, from 9 until 12, you will then conduct oversight in the afternoon and the next day, you know. So, but not only that, the population, the residents, wherever you are having that meeting, in inverted commas, would then be present at your committee meeting as observers. So the whole thing becomes and what they've called an external committee meeting to support oversight work. So the funds, you don't directly see this as oversight per se, because the funds coming from that will be funded by the committee meeting side, you know. So I don't want to go into that detail, but the point is made. But what I do want members to appreciate is just one small thing. We need to adopt this. Doesn't matter what we do, but we have a deadline, and that deadline is before the 25th. Not only that, our budget must be finalized before that. Now, that will be drafted for us, you know, and we'll come here. And I would say that as long as caucuses have agreed with you that this is right, the strategic and the activity plan and oversight, they're not going to have a problem with the budgeting per se, which will be informed by that. And as someone said, the budget plan is part of the processing and activities that we undertake. So it's on that note that I'm simply saying that that finalization next week is the 16th, 17th, 18th, etc. Are we going to be able to finalize it on Wednesday, even though we're at a workshop, the 19th? See, I'm looking at you there. Or when? Or are we going to take it to the next week when we won't have it, give the people, you know, the members here a chance to finalize the documentation for administration. So my suggestion then is to carve out an hour, at least an hour, for us to finalize it on Wednesday, or an hour and a half. At that time, we are already doing trade and industry, etc., and we carve out an hour and a half. Not only, it'll take us out to that point. Okay. I think we must also minute the fact that members feel, not feel, members are strongly of the view that our decision is to ensure that 50% of our time is spent in active oversight outside of Parliament one way or the other. Of course, that includes study trips, it includes oversight, it includes a broad number of issues, and we can't ignore that. The second point related to that is members are saying short committee meetings allow us to do something else, Chair. I mean, not in those words as much, but can you please enable us to do the work for which we were elected to do and not sit in committee all the time? Honourable Maria, the last person.
Chairperson, I support you in all of what you have said. I just thought to myself that in terms of oversight, that is so important. And if I take into consideration what we have experienced through, during that week at DGI, this is so broad. And I know this is not ideal, but one can even split up the committee in terms of oversight work, because there's so much to do, and this is a so huge division of sections that we must do oversight on, even if we must split up, say, in two groups and doing different things, that we can at least at the end come and say, you know, this is what the committee has done. Whether we have split up or not, you know, is irrespective in my opinion. But I think that is even how far we must think. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Ntikelana and Honourable Ntuli will close.
Yes, thanks, Chair. To me, the program must, any program, in fact, must immediately reflect what is the mandate of the strategic plan. Of course, within August, I mean, one would take August as an integral part of the rest of the program until the end of the year. So when I sort of personally make my own little review and making a contribution, I will do it within that context. My own business, Chair, I'm not as strong as Honorable Torok is. But I'm sort of 30% of what you say. It's around the training and trade seminars. I really feel that 4 days on it is a little bit of an overkill. If you could at least reduce it and then get a day that would look at both the strategic plan and any other briefing that DTI can immediately bring. I think to quite an extent, one of the areas I would appeal for is that we need to, at the beginning, blast ourselves as much as is possible with briefings. Because once we start molding our program for particularly oversight visits, it then becomes helpful that you do oversight visits with as much briefing. I know briefing will always be there. So that's my appeal. You know, let us pick up one day for an extra briefing. And amongst areas that have been raised, we could then check with DTI which area are they prepared to come and brief us on. But those areas which we have identified as priority areas. Thanks, Chair.
I think those points will be taken into account, and what we'll do, how we manage the detail of all of that principle, the management committee will address. Honourable Ntuli.
Thanks, Chairperson. There is a document by Parliament, Vision 2009, which says 60% of Parliament will be oversight. Then legislation, and all of that. So
I know that it's the beginning of our term, and we are trying to grapple with the issues. But as we are gearing up, I hope we'll be following this vision 2009 of 60% of our work being oversight. And I'm saying, I'm concurring with that when we are doing oversight somewhere, it is better that at that particular point we receive briefings on the spot. Let's say where we are in Transkei, we can have a committee meeting there specifically about the Transkei. So I hope with the spirit we are approaching this it's wonderful, and I think we'll be able to move forward. Thanks.
I want to close this now, Honourable Kotsi.
Chair, I'm just looking at the program on the old program. Has it taken into consideration the constituency period? I don't know. Has that been?
Definitely, that's the first thing the secretariat has to take account of. And it's only in special circumstances that Parliament will allow a committee meeting to take place. I must say that. And there's a long application process that must be undertaken. Honourable Mabaso?
I'm thinking we might be making an oversight, Honourable Chair, because we were saying that one of the tools or one of the things that we must look out for is whether EPT is being affected, and whether it is because we are going to look at it as we engage with departmental officials or entities, as well as we do oversight. So I'm proposing that we have that input that we spoke of on cooperatives fairly early, so that as we engage, we also engage on that. I have already started to speak with the people that can provide us with that, so it's only a matter of us processing. But I propose it comes fairly early. Thanks.
We're going to, as the management committee, take all these issues on board and then come back with a proposed changes if we've got them and so on. But I just want to remind members and maybe refresh their memories a little that Parliament itself, in that 2009 document and in other areas, oversight is not simply a site visit, SRTE per se. It is briefing, it is the annual reports, etc. Now, if you look at the program before you, more than 70% is oversight. And now, the kind of oversight might be what is at issue here. Because it's nearly 80%. But the kind of oversight, maybe, you know, what kind of oversight are we actually talking about? I don't want to open that debate right now. I want us to think about that. And then say, well, look, our idea of this, we've got oversight, there's three characters or three different types of oversight. It's X and Y and Z. And maybe in this term of Parliament, we need to do more X rather than Y, you know, whatever that is. So let us take that on board and come back. But a proposal already for next week in terms of the program, which you can adjust on the spot, but you will get a revised hard copy tomorrow. You would look at beginning on the 18th, which is early next week, Tuesday. We'll implement the decisions we have already taken. That minutes will be every Tuesday. And that Tuesday will be 15 minutes devoted by minutes, whether it's, particularly if we can allocate an hour and a half to committee work. So although you're going for training, we will do a committee section of at least an hour, 15 minutes of what you call it, the minutes per se, and 45 minutes of something else that requires our attention. And when it comes to the following day, I think we need to take on board the fact that we don't need Tuesday and Wednesday. We need 3 days. I think Honourable Njikalana was making certain points. Please check your programs for the revision when you come to Wednesday, the 25th and the 26th, issues like that, because that will change. There will be no Fridays added at this particular point. I want to make that clear. I will consult with the committee secretary as to whether on some of these briefings we are having, whether some of them can take us outside of Parliament, I know some are, and whether or not we can undertake, will we have the time to undertake some oversight on a particular issue in that area. So I think that the different caucuses can come back at the next meeting to indicate some suggestions in that regard. So there will be a slight revision, but rest assured there won't be any Fridays unless the Speaker calls for something urgent until October. And even then, we'll take on board the suggestion that has been agreed to by all members. Let us hold some of our oversight in the critical areas that are calling for it. And let's look at that. Let's not sit here. So we will revise the program in that regard. And the only thing that will prevent us will be a budget constraint, which will be before us shortly. But on that note, members, I want to say that we will see you on the Tuesday, the 18th. And it's in which venue?
The same venue.
Because I saw here it still has... Oh, yes, 454. All right. The second thing that we need to point out is that the management committee, if those members could stay behind just for 2 minutes, so we make an arrangement in that regard. And I'd like to thank members for remaining until 1:05. Thank you very much.